Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in the ring.
Welcome back to another edition of Leave It in the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard is Mr. David Chan himself. My Boxing Fans official radio show. Got a lot of stuff to talk about boxing, a lot of news, a lot of upcoming fights, and this past weekend fights between, you know, Andre Berto retaining his welterweight title once again. I heard the talk is Randall Bailey, since he's taking that step-aside money for Lou DiBella, is going to have a shot at Andre Berto, unless something else comes up, something bigger and juicier for Andre Berto to get his hands across. Now, you know, I sit here on Leaving Ring, look, you know, I thought that Berto was going to be able to get exactly what he was supposed to get done Saturday night. And Jan, he put up a hell of a fight. His eyes were both busted up, cut up, couldn't see. His corner felt that it was the right move, and I believe it was the right move. You know, it was getting caught a lot. Though, Berto was getting slapped with some pretty hard right hands, you know. And Victor Conte coming on in the new in the scene, in the camp, being one of the new guys there in the camp scene, and helping out Andre Berto, who's getting interviewed by Max Kellerman, and, you know, Max ain't seeing any difference of him. What are the changes and what are the corrections? He said, stand him up. You know, the last time he got in with Victor Ortiz, he said that Andre Berto, and Berto himself saying the same thing, that there was some stamina problems, you know, and that he didn't feel himself. Victor Conte then, you know, kind of voices out saying, well, I could see the difference. I'm sorry, man. You know what? I'm a big fan of Victor Conte. I think he's doing a great, fantastic job with the fighters in boxing, and he wants to make a change. You know, I know some of you guys don't feel me. there's my co-host in the background. I know he's saying he's, you know, he's trying to make a change in boxing, but I got to disagree with him. I did not see him. Yeah, you're on, brother. I did not see a major change in Andre Berto. I could be wrong, but what I was witnessing on Saturday night, right after the Gary Russell fight with Miranda, Andre Berto to me just seemed like the same old Andre Berto. Exciting, throws a lot of punches, gets hit. And when he has the right opponent in front of him, he does fantastic. It's still to be seen. I mean, you know, this is a short-lived relationship with Victor Conte being in his camp at this moment. So it's not fair to be so judgmental about him at this moment, because we haven't seen everything that Victor's going to be bringing to the table. But as of right now, in my opinion, I saw just an explosive Andre Berto, but gassed out on that fifth round. Gabriel?
I saw a guy tiring in like the back end of four and five. I gave those rounds to Zavik. I mean, here's the thing, you know, with Berto, I think he gets a lot of undue criticism just because of the whole Al Haymon thing, and maybe I don't know, maybe my website's a big part of that. But I think a big part of it is just the career. You know, all the guys he's fought on HBO, he's been on like 10 times, and really only, you know, two of those, three of those now were really
right.
Tough fights. The other ones were kind of, you know, ESPN gimmies. But Berto, at the same time, he's a very flawed guy, and I agree with you. Like, Conte, I think, did a nice job with him in terms of getting him in shape. He looked in fantastic shape, but then I think it comes down to the way he fights. All those flaws that he's got. One, he's got terrible defense, in that he uses his speed and everything as his defense. He uses his feet, which is good, I guess, to an extent. But when he goes to clinch and get inside, he doesn't put his head to either side. He kind of stays right there in the middle and lets you just wail on him with uppercuts. He doesn't really physically take charge of you. Like, you know, when Floyd clinches you, he's grabbing you at certain points on your arms and kind of tying you up and kind of doing some damage to you as he moves you around. But Berto just kind of rests on you and lets you hit him in the face. It's definitely not Sugar Ray Leonard, and it's definitely not Mildred Taylor-esque, as Max Kellerman tried to convince us all. Maybe that's how he felt, but the rest of us, none of us ever did. But anyways, I think also the thing is, Berto throws like, there's no off-speed pitch. It's just like, raw, let me throw as hard as I can. And you can't do that. No one can do that for 12
right.
rounds without tiring. And I saw a guy that was, I thought those first three rounds that HBO just said, boom, 3-0 Berto. I thought those were very close rounds. They weren't easily won in any by any stretch of the imagination. And then the next two, I thought the fight was really, the momentum was starting to turn for Zavic, and unfortunately his face fell apart. You know, but I still thought, you know, the guy wanted to go one more round. He came over here. Ludabella was like, this is going to be a great fight. Give the guy one more round. He brought his belt over here. He's 35 years old. He's not going to get another belt anytime soon. Let's give him one more round to see what's going on, because I thought Berto was fading a little bit. I don't think he was ready to go, but I think some shots were landing, that chopping right to the top of the head or high up on the side of the head. The uppercut was landing, and his offensive output looked like he was getting less and less. I mean,
right.
You saw the punch stat numbers. Dude was way out landing at a higher connect percentage on Berto, and it was like 41% to like 23%. I don't usually go by the copy box, but you know, this case seemed to be kind of a little more true as to what we were seeing, as opposed to what Max Kellerman and Roy Jones were going on and on about. I didn't see a brilliant Berto. I saw a good, close, tough fight. I wanted to see more.
Yeah, I did too. I think, you know, the more and more I watch HBO and I listen to the commentators and, you know, I keep going back with it. I just go, I don't know. It just seems that the commentators, they have lost their agenda, which is to keep it fair. They have lost their agenda of really just talking about what's in front of them, not promoting who is an HBO fighter. I know they got to put some type of excitement and they got to put something out there edging for their man, but God, you know, when you completely just edge it over where you're just not sounding professional at all, it's just really, it's really hard to listen to, you know. And I know Berto did I'm not taking anything away from Andre Berto, did a great job, you know. Jan was there to fight, like I said before. He was landing some great right crosses, which Berto just has problems with. You throw straight punches, you're going to hit Berto. Berto uses a lot of his physical body to get away from punches. Rather than slip punches and use his feet, he more or less tries to kind of come towards you and grab you. So in that way of him going in, he gets caught a little bit. And getting caught is what's happened with Victor Ortiz. You've seen what happens when you just go straight in. You know, the thing about Berto, he's a stocky, kind of a built-up kid. He's got a little small football frame. And he don't know whether or not he wants to be a wrestler or a boxer. You know what I mean? And body-wise, you know, you be a boxer, you got to be lean. So some of that stockiness, I think, may be part of the fatigue, you know, being fatigued in the ring, you know, being able to throw a large amount of punches because you do feel strong. But a lot of those punches, Gabe, we got to admit, there's not a whole lot of steam behind them. You know, it's a lot of smoke behind them, but not enough steam where it's going to make you take a step back and go, oh, wow, this guy, you know, has got a lot of power. And then it shows evidence in the mid rounds that those muscles are really not carrying a lot of stone in them. So he tires out because that body is just kind of lying to you, you know. And I think that's what Berto right now, I think he needs to kind of fall back and really understand. He's not a power hitter. He's a guy that throws punches and he has blinding speed and he can, you know, catch you and hurt you and cut you. But he's got to learn how to pace himself and throw punches that are going to count rather than just throwing barrages of punches and just hoping one or two of six or eight punches are going to land. It just seems to me it's just a lot being spent rather than being cautious and banking what is going to be on your upper hand. I don't know. I could be wrong.
I don't. Just looking at his body,
my mind,
I think that's just the way that's the way he is. You know, I mean, I don't think it's going to change. I think too. You know, Victor and them, they worked together what, 2 months, 3 months,
right?
First camp. But I think it just comes down to the way he fights. I mean, you know, you can get, like, and Victor said this to me. We were talking after the Zab fight. He's like, I can get you in a great shape. You know, and obviously looking at both those guys, they're in fantastic shape. But it's what you do with it, you know, that he can't control. If the guy goes in there and just throws his wad in the first 4 or 5 rounds by throwing way too hard of shots, never using an off-speed pitch, you know, never mind all the technical flaws of squaring up not really shooting a double jab, you know, and just everything the same speed, just as hard as you can, you're going to burn out. And that's something that, you know, Berto's going to have to change. His trainer's going to have to change. There's just so many technical flaws in him. I don't think, you know, Victor could do whatever with him, get him in all that kind of shape, and he could pound a Red Bull before the fight. He still, if he throws punches that hard, that often, and whiffs the way he did, that's going to tire you out every day, you know, and twice on Sunday. So, you know, to me, what I was hoping to see was not so much what was under the hood, but, you know, what was in his head, you know, and how he was going to approach that. And just the flaws as a fighter, you know, the squaring up and the way he holds. I was happy that he didn't hold quite as much as he normally does, but he started to in the fourth and the fifth. And I think there was a sequence at the end of the fourth round. It was either the fourth or the fifth. I was pretty sure it was at the end of the fourth. And Zavik made him miss, like, several punches. It was actually his defense was much better than HBO was giving him credit for. He was making him, you know, he was blocking a lot of stuff and catching a lot of gloves and elbows stuff early on, but then he was, like, using upper body movement and stuff to make Berto miss, and that was the thing that kind of stuck out to me, was that here's this guy just winging, you know, kind of rear hooks and left hooks and big right hands, and it wasn't just like, you know, when Zavik's moving his body, he should have been controlling him with the jab, just bang, 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 you know, three jabs, and then come with the right hand. Said it was like kind of,
and those half jabs.
Like,
did you look at those jabs? I mean, because when he did jab, he was jabbing, but then he would forget to
it was a Mosley jab.
Yeah, you know, it was like a half jab and then walk in, and that's what Young kind of picked up on, was like, you know what, this is not a jab to keep me off balance and to make me move my position so he can land a counter punch. This is a jab to walk in to land a big mustard punch, and that's why he opened up and he was able to be successful with his right hand, you know, and that's what a lot of fighters, not just Berto, a lot of fighters, they're lacking in the very small department, you know, I mean, because let's be honest, the fundamentals and the basics of boxing is easy to learn, but it's very hard to apply. It's fighters with talent seem to not really apply them, for the exception of Floyd Mayweather, who uses a lot of the basic moves in boxing to his advantage. He uses them to capitalize his talent, you know, his speed and his right cross. A lot of these fighters got to go back to that drawing board and start with the A's before they move on to the B's and C's and D's of boxing. Berto needs to do that. It's great that he's bringing Victor Conte in, but what is good of having great stamina and upping your blood cell rate and all this other stuff when you're still lacking what we're seeing are big flaws in your game plan? Doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Well, he's got a young trainer, too, you know? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a young trainer, too, you know, in that, in Tony Morgan. And, they, you know, it's almost like Jermaine Taylor when he came up with his car. And it's like you don't see a lot of professional experience. You see a lot of amateur experience. And it's kind of a different game. And you know, less so for Taylor's trainer. But you know, with Tony Morgan, they both kind of came up together. And I wonder, you know, it's not for me to say dump your trainer or what that relationship is there, but it seems to me, just experience-wise, how are you going to polish Berto into truly a world-class fighter if you're not truly a world-class trainer? And I know it's that old age-old thing of, you know, you can't get experience, so you can't get the job if you don't have experience, and you can't get experience if you don't have the job. But, you know, this might be the first of Tony Morgan's fighters, and he learns from this guy, and the next guy gets a little bit better. It was something that Nacho Berestain said. He talked about the watering down of trainers, and he said particularly, specifically to Mexico, when we were asking him why Mexican fighters are kind of face-first, no-defense guys. And he said, well, a lot of the trainers, you know, before there was like four or five masters, and, you know, really just guys that knew the sport up and down and in terms of training.
Right.
But then you got a lot of guys that flooded the market, you know, that are lower-tier fighters that never really mastered all the tools. And then their careers kind of got cut short, or their careers didn't go anywhere. And so they ended up saying, well, screw it. I can't do anything else. I'll be a trainer. And so they pass on their bad technique or their lack of techniques to other fighters. And you get this kind of watered down effect. And I kind of see that a lot in U.S. boxing as well.
Yeah,
you know?
a lot. Every time we get, Yeah, every time we get a world-class a trainer, like, you know, like Virgil Hunter or somebody, or even like Emmanuel Stewart, we've asked them that, you know, and they've all said, yeah, there's got to be some type of regulation or overseen of certain trainers, because now anybody can pay $50 and just become a trainer. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And kind of, you know, an apprenticeship, you know, that's usually what they talk about, you know. Mm-hmm. And Manny was a celebrated amateur or a very solid amateur fighter. He was a Golden Gloves guy. And, you know, he kind of was that kind of trainer. He kind of learned by being there and doing it and trial and error. But, you know, like Joe Goosen, he said he did, like, I think a 10-year apprenticeship at Main Street. I got a call coming in. You want to take this? John Molina Jr. You pull him in.
Yeah. See what he's got to say.
Hang on a second.
I know everybody's on hold right now. They want to talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Just stay on hold real quick. It seems like John Molina Jr., I believe that's who he's clicking over for, has called in and talked to us here on Leaving the Ring. You can call in at 347-215-7598 to speak to myself or Gable Montoya here on Leaving the Ring. Of course, you got to speak to our man, David Chen, who works the switchboard behind us in order to be patched in. So everybody, please be patient. Let's talk to Mr. John Molina. What's up, brother? How you doing?
Good, man. How you guys doing?
Doing good, man. Was trying to catch up with you yesterday when I was, the day before when I was in L.A. Yeah, trying to catch up with you, brother. How's camp going for you?
Camp's going great. Staying busy, working hard as always, and getting ready for some big things, hopefully real soon here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a little bit about that, because I know that you're in camp and you're working out. And when I was down in L.A., and I was, you know, with Gabriel here, we were talking. I had asked, I was like, hey, I'm, you know, hearing some rumors here and there, but wanted to ask you if what was the purpose right now? I know you're in, you know, go to the gym, you know, periodically to keep yourself in shape. But is there a particular reason? I mean, is there anything in big talks of you getting in with somebody out there worthwhile?
I believe that the only fight right now worthwhile at 135, I'm going to ask you guys, since you guys are the experts, who would you guys like to see, one of the arguably the biggest punchers in myself, again, not to be arrogant, not to be conceited in any fashion, but
right,
at 135,
right.
Arguably one of the biggest punchers, who would you guys like to see me in there at 135? Who else is there at 135?
I think the only guy out there right now at 135 that I like to see you get in with, since Robert the Ghost Guerrero has left and went to 140, I like to see you get in with Bam Bam, Brandon Rios. I think that's a phenomenal fight there.
I think that brings excitement to 135. I think there's no one else in there. With all due respect to the champions that are there right now, Miguel Vasquez, great boxer, great champion. But from a fan perspective, let's be honest, he's not really the guy you want to see. He's not really the guy that the networks want because of his fighting ability. It's like watching a glorified amateur match without headgear. Now, no disrespect to Miguel Vasquez. He's a great champion, and he held his title well and has done well against punchers. I just don't think the excitement level is there. Not for people, not for the fans, not for boxing and what boxing needs. Right now, I think the only best fight out there for me would be Brandon Rios. I mean, the guy is a great champion. He fought a great fight against Miguel Costa to win this title and fought an even better fight against Ubano Antillion to have his first title defense. And arguably one of the best, if I'm not mistaken, three-round fights or two-round fights that we've had in a long time, probably since Hagler and Hearns.
I think it's guaranteed action, that fight. I mean, it's you know, if it's in Southern California, one, it's going to do very good numbers because everybody knows it's a competitive fight. With your size, too, the way I look at it, you know, Brandon's what, 5'7", 5'8"? He's big, though.
Yeah.
He's not growing the weight. But you're 5'10 and a half. I know you've probably got a longer reach than him. I mean, I've stood next to both of you, and, you know, I'd stand over him and I don't stand over you. That's just, you know, and then, you know, on top of it, I think, you know, just in terms of style, I mean, you guys are both so aggressive. You kind of go about things a little bit different, though. You've been trying to be more of a boxer a little bit more, working from the outside. You're working with Clemente Medina now, aren't you?
Yeah, we're working with Clemente Medina. As Abner Mares, he at one time had Angulo as well. Had a slew of champions, you know, implementing some really good things in my style right now. And again, you're right. I go about things a little bit different, but let's not get it mistaken that my style is that of being an aggressive puncher. And Brandon Rios, I'm sure as hell going to accommodate me there if we do get it on.
That and the trash talk alone. I'm looking at the rest of it, like, you know, Miguel Vasquez, you know, I don't know, that's not the hottest fight in the world. And I'm not sure, is that Linares fight versus Antonio DeMarco? That's a lightweight fight. That's
a lightweight fight for the vacant title. But again, with all due respect to those two great, great fighters, great warriors, I don't see the excitement level there as opposed to a Brandon Rios, John Molina Jr. fight. And, God, did I just talk to myself in the third person? That's horrible. I don't see the great part. That is bad. I thought you were talking to Hank Lundy for a second. I don't see
you didn't stand
I don't
though.
See the excitement level there as opposed to myself and Brandon Rios. I think
right. That
is a very exciting fight. And to me, I mean, what am I here for? I'm not here to fight the Mauricio Jestas of the world. I'm not here to fight the Sharif Bogaries of the world, the guys that are, you know, they're talking a big game. They're coming up. But right now, why do I want those guys when I can go right after the kingpin of the division, which is Brandon Rios?
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Has there been any talk or mention of you getting a shot at Brandon Rios? I mean, any interest from their side?
I believe there's interest on their side in the simple fact that Brandon Rios is a warrior. He wants to fight anybody and everybody. He said it himself, and I believe him wholeheartedly. I mean, I think he's on a mission. He's pretty much running the division right now. And I don't think Brandon Rios is going to shy away from a fight from myself. I seriously don't think that. I think it'll be a cold day in hell before Brandon Rios turned down the fight. So I've heard some rumors out there that could be a fight that's possible. I think the fans want it. I recently went back east for a vacation with my wife, and we went and stopped by the Gleason's gym in Brooklyn. You know, just as a fan, I wanted to go in and see this gym that's been around since 1932. And right when I walk in there, the first thing people say is, we want to see you and Brandon Rios get it on. And these are people I never met in my life.
Right.
And I said, hey, I want to see it just as much as you want to see it. So the adamant boxing fan knows that is the biggest fight at 135. That, I mean, it's not a Brandon Rios versus a Marco Antonio Barrera. Marco Antonio Barrera was a great champion. I think we all agree that he's obviously had better days. And at 135, I think that is the marquee name. That is the guy that needs to fight, that I need to fight to establish myself as a major force to be reckoned with at 135.
Well, let me tell you.
I remember Rios mentioning Barrera, and we've talked about it,
yeah.
Dave and I. It's like, I don't want to see that fight. Nobody wants to see that fight. It's, you know, it's like that Adam Sandler bit, the senseless beating of an old man. You know, I just think it would just be pointless. You know, but you guys,
it would be pointless.
Guy.
And don't get me wrong. I don't want to ever talk bad about Barrera because the guy is a warrior in the ring. But it just doesn't make sense, right? Why would you do that when you get two guys in the prime of their career, arguably the biggest punchers in the division right now, in the present, in this time right now, that hardly ever takes a backward step, and to get it on that ring? That's going to be an explosive, entertaining 135-pound fight.
Yep. Well, let me give you a little bit of my take about that. I think it's one thing is Brandon Rios has fought two smaller guys, Victor Caio and Urbano Antillon. And realistic, Urbano has kind of been on his last leg or legs without legs at all when he had got in with the ring with Brandon Rios, where here he's got a really big 135-pounder. I mean, I've met you numerous times, and I've looked up at you because I'm 5'9", and I'm looking at you, and I'm like, damn, dude, how are you making that weight? And with Brandon, I went to go out there to go see him train and spar, and I told him the exact same things. Like, how are you making this weight? To me, this would be an equal opportunity of two young warriors getting in who really are a little outgrown of 135 or still making 135, but to really dish out who would be the better man that night and who holds bigger power. You guys both pack huge, huge punches in this fight. I think it's a tremendous fight, and it'll be great, not just for the fans, but for the sport and boxing, period.
And you know, I agree. I talk amongst the people in my team, and I say, who else is there for me? With all respect to the guys that are the top 10 contenders, which is myself included, who else is there at 135 that is worth mentioning? In all due respect, with all due respect, it's Brandon Rios. He is the man. He's asserted himself as the kingpin of the division. You have Marquez, who is the lineal champion, that went up to 140, I believe, to fight, or 147 to fight Pacquiao. Okay, so he's going to go ahead and turn that over. You have Robert Guerrero going to 140 for bigger and better paydays, who recently had a shoulder injury, who is no longer going to be in action. He'll be out of action for about 6 months. And I think this is going to be a beautiful segue for my career and for Brandon Rios' career, right into 140, because you could throw our names in the hat with big punches. You got Maidana at 140. You got Devin Alexander. You got Timothy Bradley. I mean, it's pretty deep at 140. But right now, I think me and Brandon Rios need to take care of business at 135. And again, you guys know my style. I'm not one to talk crap about anyone. I have no bad blood for Brandon Rios. I have no nothing against the guy. I think he's a great, great warrior, and I applaud his style in the ring. I just think he has something that I want, and I think we need to settle it and have a showdown at 135 and see who is the biggest puncher at 135.
Let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
Oh, I just stole your line, Dave.
Jinx.
He's already bought me beers the other day. Maidana turned down Morales. Said, you know, he's got to fight in Argentina like a week later. He's like, I'm good with the guy that I'm supposed to beat. So he turned it down. If somebody called you and asked you, even after we've talked about the Barrera thing, they said, Eric Morales at 140 for this title, you know, next week on the Star Power show, what would you say?
I would say, where do I sign? that's Eric Morales. That is a guy that is a great. I'm not going to say great name because he showed what he's worth. He showed his salt what he's worth against Maidana, who I think is a tremendous, tremendous puncher and a tremendous warrior in the ring as well. So he showed the poison that he possesses still. Eric Morales is just a great, great future Hall of Famer. But again, these are the fights that we need. The young guys like myself that are young in the sport, so to speak, we need the Eric Morales of the world. We need the guys that have been there before that are worthwhile to mention, and we need to go in there and show them that we are the young guys in the division, and it's time to the changing of the guard, so to speak. It's time to change the guard and put the ball in our hands and let us run with it. Let us make some excitement. I kind of want to take the, I'm not jumping on any bandwagons. I've always been more of an acquaintance with Victor Ortiz, a good friend of mine, and I kind of want to take the Victor Ortiz approach. I'm going after Berto. Right off the bat, I mean, I want to go after Brandon Rios right off the bat. And I'm sure this is exactly what Victor Ortiz was mentioning when he went after Berto. And everyone else, he was a 4-1 underdog in Vegas. And I'm not going to say, oh, well, I knew everything, I'm a fortune teller. But I had a feeling that Victor Ortiz was going to pull us out. And now look at him today. I mean, he's, again, behind the gun. He's an underdog against arguably the greatest fighter of our generation, of our era, against Floyd Mayweather. And I'm going to go, not to segue away from what we're talking about, but I'm going to go ahead and say Victor has a hell of a chance and is definite live underdog in this fight against Mayweather.
Let me ask you.
Really?
John, we have so many people that listen to the show and so many people throw out questions on Twitter, on Facebook. And, we have the much utter respect for you. But if I don't ask these particular questions, these guys are going to rape me pretty bad if I don't do this, okay? One of the
Let's
questions a lot
Fire
of the fans...
Away. Fire away.
Okay. A lot of the fans, look, they're like, this is their thought about this. You fell off after your loss. You came back in with Hank Lundy. You did a fantastic job. You were losing that fight. You knocked out the guy. But then you fell off again, and you were fighting some no-namers. Their thought is, why is it that you think you deserve Bam Bam Rios at this moment when Bam Bam has bigger opportunities in unifying with the Kevin Mitchell or a Murray? What would be your case about that?
My case with that is that people that know my style, I think it makes for a great fight. Styles make fights. I think I'm there. I'm rated in the top 10 in the world, even in the top 10 in Ring Magazine, which I think is a pretty prestigious ranking system. I believe that people that know me personally know that I'm going to go in there and I'm going to lay it on the line and I'm going to put up or shut up, and we know I'm going to put up. And, Kevin Mitchell, again, is a guy that's built his career, overseas. I believe it was, I'm not sure where he's from, England, if I'm not mistaken. He just beat John Murray, again, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And you throw the name in the hat of Brandon Rios, I mean, there's still not the excitement there. I mean, you guys are boxing experts. Is that excitement to you, or is it just, oh, well, it's Brandon Rios fighting another guy that earned a shot because he's rated in this sanctioning body? I mean, they could say the same about me, but I just think that, and I can guarantee you're coming from the source, that I'm going to bring the fight, and I'm going to bring everything I have in me. I have everything, mind, body, everything that I have with me. If that fight happens between me and Brandon Rios, I am going to bring everything I have that night to make an exciting, explosive fight. I'm not going to bring a glorified amateur fight. I'm not going to try to outpoint the guy. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to try and knock him out.
The way I look at it, I actually kind of like Rios versus Mitchell, but at the same time, we're doing this fight in Southern California, right? You know, if it's going to go down, or we're probably Cali. That's where, you know, they're trying to build him at Home Depot Center, and you fought a ton of times in Southern Cal. Why not? You know, I mean, like, okay, you're going to bring Mitchell over here. He's probably not going to bring any fans with him. He might, but, you know, and to me, when I look at a fight, fans love to throw around deserve or what have you done for me lately.
Right.
Well, what you've done is continue to fight and continue to win. A lot of these guys don't take stay busy fights. They just kind of, you know, and you just basically started, you know, doing that with this last fight. I mean, I can kind of get their point. I kind of wanted you to be more active after Lundy, but at the same time.
What was the reason why you weren't, though?
Boxing is a business, but at the same token, there wasn't very many fights out there for me at that time. You know, I'm trusting wholeheartedly in my great promotional team with Goose and Peter Promotion. I have a lot of trust in my managers and co-managers and Sergio Diaz and my father, John Molina Sr. And these guys have guided my career, and I believe that I believe I deserve a shot against Brandon Rios. I think my power speaks for itself. I mean, you know, Mitchell is a great fighter. I think, you know, when it comes down to either or, I think we both deserve a shot. But, you know, if I could get the nod, I'm going to take it wholeheartedly. There's not going to be any hesitation on my side. If the fight is presented to me, I will definitely sign the contract and get it on.
You know, after the Hank Lundy, you did kind of disappear, and they end up having an off televised fight for you. You know, with that happening, do you think that kind of backlashed you a little bit with some fight fans? Because do you feel that, you know, since that happened, you have to kind of rebuild yourself back up and in a way prove it to them that you are a well-deserving contender that's willing to go through fire to fight the best?
Yeah, of course, that's always lingering in the back of your mind, but I'm a big, big believer, and I said it once again, or I said it before, and I'll say it once again, I'm a big believer that everything happens for a reason. Timing is everything. This is not me doing this. This is not me orchestrating this. I'm a big believer that opportunities show themselves at the right time, and I think this is the right time for me. My last fight against Frankel, who again was nothing to brag about, with all due respect to Frankel, but you know, he's fought some guys, he's upset some prospects, he's beat some guys, and he's had some experience in there with a lot of guys, and I got him out of there, beat him up pretty bad, if you guys remember his face after that fight. But again, yeah, I do believe that I need to assert myself as more of a force to be reckoned with at 135, and I think I'm doing so. I think the people that are adamant boxers that know boxing know that that's a great fight. If I could fly all the way to New York and have guys that I've never met in my life tell me, utter the first things out of their mouth is you and Brandon Rios, I think the buzz is there. I think the excitement's there, and I think that gives me the nod and gives me the deserving of that fight.
Styles make fights, you know, and I like Brandon. To me, is a guy, and you, with your mentality and the way you fight, I think both of you guys are the kind of guys that you put him in most fights where the style is complicit, you know, like a Mitchell or a Murray might be. Those are going to be good fights, you know, and I still think people get so upset about deserve, and to me, I'm like, I just want to see a good fight, and I like this fight, quite honestly, you know. I'm not your promoter. But I like this fight. You know, you asked me that question. I'm just going to say that. You know, it's guaranteed action. Both guys are, you know, the way I always look at it, it's a good fight for as long as it lasts. You know, and I know you guys have been in, you know, sparring before. You guys both kind of know a little bit about what each other's about, although you've switched trainers and kind of are starting to switch things up in the ring. I think it's interesting, and this is a question to me, because I'm getting people tweeting at me going, well, I'd rather see Mitchell and Murray, or, you know, or maybe even Vasquez with Rios. But to me, it's like, okay, I mean, Vasquez, that's a tougher fight for Rios. Mitchell and Murray versus this fight, I mean, I'd have to ask the fans, who do you think has the best chance of winning? Because Mitchell, I think, could be knocked out. He has been stopped. Murray, you know, I would pick Brandon Rios. This fight is kind of intriguing. I mean, I'd be honest with you. I'd lean towards Rios. But at the same time, just based on that Acosta win, he dealt with a guy with speed and power, though he was long in the tooth. You know, and but still, you have an eraser, and I think it's a legitimate one. You know, we saw it against
Lundy. I'm actually, now I want this fight even more, the fact that you say you're going to lean towards Rios, because when I was fighting Hank Lundy, you were leaning towards Hank Lundy as well, and we know what happened there.
Hey, so I picked you on that one. Remember that. I picked you on that one.
Yeah, no, and again, guys, like I said, what are we here for? As fighters today, what are we here for? At 135, I do respect the people saying Mitchell or Murray. I respect that, and rightfully so, because those guys are proven warriors in the ring. But again, you're talking about two Southern Cali-based fighters, entertaining fighters, arguably the biggest punchers in the division today, right now. And I will go on record and say, again, not to toot my own horn, but I will say I am the biggest puncher at 135 right now. And I believe that wholeheartedly. And, unless I get proven otherwise. But I think it's a definite intriguing match between myself and Brandon Rios. I think that's a time bomb waiting to explode. Again, there's no bad blood on my end. You guys know that that's not my style. I don't go making rhymes or saying this, that, and the other about the guy. I respect what he's done. He's a grand champion. He just has what I want, plain and simple. He has what I want, and I'm determined to go get.
You know, and I got to say, this to me, not taking anything away from Murray or Mitchell at all, but you guys are not going to look for each other if you meet in the ring. And I think that's what fight fans always want, their imagination captured with the, you know, there's always comparisons. Are we ever going to see another Hearns and Hagler? I don't think we are, but I think we can get a little close to it. And I think with you and Rios, because you're going to be two guys that are just going to be willing to kind of leave it in the ring, go in the middle of the ring and dish it out. I a lot of times I like to watch boxing, you know, two guys that move and do a lot of flashy stuff, but it's just, I got the other moments of my life where I go, you know what, I want to see just two guys go in and go blow to blow, toe for toe, and really just bang each other up and see who beats the will out of who first, you know. And I think that's the kind of fight we're going to see if it was signed between you and Brandon Rios. I think that would happen. You're going to see two guys go out there and try to knock each other.
It might even be in a phone booth. It might even be a phone booth,
right.
But I'll accommodate that. I mean, if you want to do it. Like I said, Brandon Rios is a great champion. Let's not make any mistake about it. He's a great champion, a warrior. He's proven himself. He's beaten Acosta. He's beaten Ubano. He's done what he has to do at 135. But there's one last guy that I think he has to face before he goes and segues off into a different weight division. And I believe that's me.
Absolutely, bro. Hey, thanks again, man, for calling in and, you know, updating us on what you want to do here on your career, brother. It's always great to have you on. And when I'm up in L.A. again, I got to catch up with you, man. You know, hang out with you
definitely,
for a minute
definitely.
And watch you train.
Yeah,
all right, brother.
Come down to our training and see how we're doing. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it, man.
All right, brother. Good luck with you, man.
Take care.
You got it, boss. Bye-bye.
I think it's a great fight, to tell you the truth. I know some fight fans are saying no. He's still got to work for it. But hey, you know what? A lot of times, man, deserving or you got to work for it, sometimes you just got to throw the guy in the ring and see what kind of magic can happen that particular night. And I got to tell you, you know, John Molina, yeah, did he fall off a little bit after the Hank Lundy? Did he kind of go into the hidings? But it could all be boiled down to the promoters and the trainer themselves. I don't know. It could also be some medical stuff behind it. We don't really know the scenario of the situation of what happened to him. But at this moment, you got a young guy
trainer.
That's going. Yeah, and he switched trainer. But right now, at this moment, you got a young guy that says, you know what, I'm going to call in leaving the ring, because apparently leaving the ring is where you leave it, in the ring, by calling out other fighters. And he's like, hey, I want Brandon Rios. And you know what? That's just not far-fetched for me. I think that's a great fight, and it's a great fight for not just for Southern California, but for all of California and Vegas and the neighborhood states to all come down to see a phone booth fight, because – to come to think of it, both guys are not the fastest dudes in the world. You know, I would probably edge Rios a little quicker. I'm not really sure, though, but the length, the lankiness of arm reach is all John John. The only thing is that John John likes to bang. He's one of those guys that you would hit him, he wants to bang with you. You know, he kind of throws boxing skills out the door. Same thing with Brandon. You know, he does great against boxers, but we haven't really seen him do great against a big phone booth, wants to take you to the middle of the ring. Anthony Leon tried it, but you saw he was a much smaller man, and we saw the outcome. With John John, hey, it's a little bit more interesting. A little bit more interesting. We got a great show today. Heard some rumors about the Ring Magazine packing it up and moving it down to L.A. We'll talk a little bit about that. But we got some fight fans on right now on hold. They've been holding. They want to be patched in and talk about some boxing. What was that, brother?
We also got our guest that got to call in. We're our first guest. But in about 5 minutes, just letting you
okay.
know.
Okay. Let's at least get one fight fan in on really, really quick and talk to them. We'll get do this one pretty fast. Rob, you've been on hold for a minute, brother. What's on your mind y'all leaving the ring at right now?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Y'all got me in the gym now.
Oh, yeah? Is that right, man? You getting your swell on or what?
I was jamming out some Wu-Tang, jumping rope, but now I'm going to leave it in the ring, jumping rope with some headphones on. But like y'all said about, you know, yesterday, I was like, last week, I was like, hey, you know, We know what Berto should do. You know what I mean? He's discovered one of the problems where it's stamina. The other problem is the enabler/trainers. But you know what? After seeing that fight last night, I hope he stays the same because, honestly, it's more fun to watch. He gets hit. He throws a lot of shots. And it just makes for a funner fight, you know, versus him trying to box.
I'm just glad you're not calling us from the shower. Yeah, Berto, you know, it is. I mean, it's always easy for us to kind of look at him and go, God, look at those flaws. But, you know, at the same time, if I want to put a positive spin on it, because like I was saying before, everybody kind of piles on him because he's like, you know, the Al Heyman's kid, basically, is how people refer to him. You know, he gets preferential treatment because of that. And, you know, you can't really knock Al's hustle. I mean, geez, if he's able to somehow get HBO to overpay for his fighters or get his fighters on HBO 10 times, I mean, you really can't knock the hustle. You do have to kind of examine the nature of it, and that's a whole other subject. But in terms of Berto, it's easy for us to just look at him and say, you know, well, this is, I believe, Jose Benavides. I'm sorry. Dave, I'll be right back.
Go ahead. Look at this, he's all criticizing you about being on the shower, but then he drops off in the middle of answering you here. Rob, what's up with that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think he should fight Khan. Khan wants a shot at Mayweather. He's screaming Mayweather. You think he should take the Ortiz route and test out the waters with Berto, strong, Heyman fighter, HBO fighter. I mean, it's Golden Boy, so I don't think it'd be that hard to make.
You know, I don't think that – you know what? Here's the thing, though, is that, you know, he's got to fight another guy that's smaller. I mean, we talk about criticism, you know, and I think that's one of the biggest criticism a lot of fans have had against him is that he's – you know, the cherry picking to the I'm picking a smaller guy, and we saw the outcome of what happened with Victor Ortiz. Now he gets another shot, and he's going to go with the money, which is going to be Amir Khan. Two guys, again, that can't sell, you know, a whole lot of tickets here in the States. The Randall Bailey, you know, Mr. KO himself, him taking some side money, step aside, because, you know, he figured, you know, I can go overseas, fight Young, who was, he was the mandatory challenge for him, but he wasn't going to make any money. It would have to go down to where he was at. And he said, you know what, I'm gonna pass that. Let's see if Berto can regain that title, take it away, and then I can fight him for a title here in the States. I think Berto's move would probably be a little bit better by doing that, though he will be criticized. I think any move he makes at the moment that's not going away, that's not going towards a major threat, is going to be criticized. But I think him challenging Bailey just for right now, just to see where he's at with Victor Conte and to see whether or not he corrects a lot of those flaws, I would say he would have to do, because if he was to beat Khan, it would be like, well, you beat a guy that moved up and hadn't really tested himself. Big deal. You know what I mean? And it could put leverage for him to face Mayweather next. But it still will leave that question of whether or not he's going to be a threat to Mayweather just because he fought a smaller guy and didn't prove a whole lot. That's my opinion about it. I could be wrong, but that's the way I would look at if I was part of his team. I would say, you know, you're damn if you do, you're damn if you don't, but let's damn with this for the moment, you know, and kind of gather up our cards and our strategy and everything else that's been given to us before we start going through the gusto and going for the big boys in the league, you know. And Berto, to me, he still has a lot of soul searching, and it's evident in his interview. You know, the guy wanted to cry. A lot of the criticism and being on Twitter and being bashed a little bit, it's taking its effect on the poor kid, man. I'm gonna have to put you on hold, brother. Okay.
All right. Thank y'all.
All right, brother. Hey, Gabe, you back online?
Yeah, that was actually Benavides' PR folks. He's in transit. He's kind of delayed heading back home for his fight in Arizona next week. They just basically requested to come back on next Thursday. He's going to miss the window. And we've got some other guests. We got Gary Russell, and we have another guest coming up here in just a second. So Benavides will be on next week. It's kind of a bummer, but, you know, it's just the nature of the business. We got a bonus guest, though, with John Molina, so there you go.
Absolutely. Let's patch in some fight fans, then.
Boxing 360s, the Mario Yagobi, who's the promoter there, is arguably one of the most persistent people I've ever met in my life. He's been hitting me with emails about this next guest I'm going to call in a second, Amanda Serrano. Now, you guys all know I don't cover female fighters. I don't really get into the female boxing, but she's going for IBF featherweight title on Saturday. And Mario showed me tape, and he said, look, she's the only female that we signed, and it's because when you watch her, you don't think she's a female. She fights like a guy. She fights technically sound, very well balanced, good power. And so he sent me some tape. I watched it. I was convinced. And I'm going to call her in right now. And she's fighting Saturday in Brooklyn. So if you're in the Brooklyn area and you listen to the show, there's actually a bunch of other fights on the card. But I'll be right back, Dave.
Go ahead. Anyways, while he's on hold and stuff, really, really quick, the October magazine issue for Undisputed Magazine, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but we've emerged with them and became part owner of the magazine. So we are going to have a good October issue. I'm sorry, I'm over here looking. Everybody's writing me all at once and stuff, and I know some folks want to get on right now. So you're going to have to hold off just a little bit because I know you're going to want more than just 10 or 15 seconds of time here on Leaving the Ring. So be a little patient, and we'll get you on. I did want to talk a little bit about Gary Russell. I thought he did a great job on Miranda. The guy throws a lot of punches, but I just still – I'm not completely sold whether or not he's going to be ready for Mikey Garcia. I know HBO were kind of saying that he was a little more in different class with above Mikey Garcia, but I just didn't agree with that at all. You know, so I don't know what your guys' thoughts about that. I thought Gary was doing a whole lot, and he, you know, was doing the right things, but I'd still like to see him kind of move a little more closer before we start talking about other names and putting them in that are going to be major tests and stuff. I hate to see a prospect get ruined before they become a contender. You know, that's a shitty thing to see in our sport of boxing. Sometimes it becomes a little brutal, and I know that a lot of us want to see great fights. Go ahead, Gabe.
Hey, I'm here with featherweight Amanda Serrano, who's out of Puerto Rican, out of New York. She's going for the vacant IBF, I believe it's the featherweight, not the super featherweight title, this Saturday at the Aviator Sports Complex in Brooklyn, New York. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Good, good. Now excited, anxious, ready to go in there and rumble.
This is your first title shot, right?
Yes, first major world title fight, yes.
Well, most people don't.
You sound so sweet. I mean, I couldn't even picture you punching anybody.
Oh, well, looks like deceiving.
Yeah,
I watched tape of her. You had a. I mean, I'll send a link over to you, Dave. You'd probably change your tune if you saw her.
No, I do know of her. You know, I mean, surprisingly, I know like a lot of times we've had. You're not the first female fighter we've had on. You know, and I do watch female fights and stuff. I just that it's if it's brought to my attention, you know, and I've seen Boxing 360 throw up her, you know, some links about her, and I've kind of caught up with you and stuff. So I was excited when he told me you were going to come on. I was like, oh yeah, I know who she is. So welcome.
Oh, thank you.
I was checking out your bio. You know, most people probably, you know, on our shows, your first time, we'll kind of start at the beginning. I understand you kind of came to boxing a little bit late. Your sister was a fighter, and your sister didn't want you to be a fighter. Can you talk a little bit about your beginnings in the sport?
Well, I was her number one fan. I used to watch. I was brought up watching her. She was actually one of my first fights boxing I ever seen. And I would like try to do it for a little while, but I was 12, 13 years old. It was hard for me. But when I told her that I really wanted to do it, she was her and her trainer, which is my trainer now, Jordan Maldonado, he was like, no, there's no way. There's no way I want her to do it too. And my sister knows how hard it is and the struggle it is as being a female fighter. So she took it out of me in the ring. She tried to beat it out of me, but I came back the next day stronger and willing to do it. I wanted it bad.
What was it about it that struck you, that this is what I want to do? I mean, it's just not – I can understand why, you know, and maybe this is chauvinist, but why guys want to fight. I mean, it's kind of in our nature, but women wanting to box, is it part of the culture where you're from with Puerto Rico, or what is it?
Well, no, because I've never seen boxing until my sister started boxing, and it was just the attention she had, and I felt like, wow, I want to be a part of – I also wanted to be a part of her. I wanted us to have something in common so we can talk about and be a little more into with each other. So that was the major part. I wanted to have people root for me and people wish good for me.
Now, you had a good amateur career, and then you turned pro. But at what point did you know you wanted to do this for a living? From the very beginning?
Well, I tried for the amateur. I mean, I only had 9 amateur fights. I was 8-1 as an amateur. I won the New York Golden Gloves in 2008. And after that, I said, "Wow!" I realized I won the Golden Gloves, and I said, "I want to do this." I said, "I'm gonna put my all into it." And after a year, after I took some time off, then I came right back, and I said, "I want to turn pro."
Well, I'm just kind of interested in checking out, you know, looking at your career and everything. And, you know, most people don't get a title shot at, like, 11 fights. Is it just the nature of female fighting? Because the woman that you're fighting against, she's got, like, 10 fights, 11 fights.
Yeah.
Is it just there's not a wide field of female fighters, and so the rankings are, you know, the careers are a little bit shorter when they get to the title shot?
Well, there's not as much opportunities for the female as there is for men. There isn't a lot of titles. This one, you just have to have a good team surrounding you. So Boxing 360 is the greatest, and they gave me this opportunity. A lot of people are not willing to put up the money for female title fights because they are expensive. So you just have to have a good team behind you, and they'll take you far.
Let me ask you, why subject yourself to this punishment in such a brutal sport? You don't get paid a whole lot. You're never going to get the recognition. That's what some people are going to assume. You're never going to get that recognition that the men get. Why put yourself through a sport that is obviously does not respect you just yet?
Oh, man. No, it's hard to say, but it's just, to me, it's fun. I mean, I don't mind getting hit. And I like to get hit. I mean, I don't mind getting hit, and I like to hit people. I like just the whole sport of it. It's a chess game, you know. It's learning. I love learning. I love going to the gym, learning something new, practicing it, and then going out there and putting it all together in a fight and seeing how far I've come along.
You know, you sound like the girl next door. You look like the girl next door. You know, got fans right now tweeting saying, you know, cute voice, cute face, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Do you, in some ways, because I do tell kids in the gym or people, you got to be a little crazy to be a fighter. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, you have to have a little cuckoo in your head to go in there and get punched. But it's fun. At the end of the day, it's fun. When the referee raises my hand in victory, it's all worth it. I love it. It's all worth it.
Well, there you go.
You're a southpaw, right?
Yes.
Are you natural southpaw, or do they flip you
no.
around?
No, I'm a righty, but when I started boxing, I started southpaw stands, and my trainer just left me like that. He said I was pretty good. I looked awkward the other way. He kept on trying to teach me the other way, but it was just, he was like, forget it, just do it the other way, and that I just perfected.
That's strange. It just felt natural to this when he said, you know, get in your stand.
Yeah.
And you just
yeah, it was. Yeah.
That's interesting. Are there particular fighters that you modeled yourself after, and are they females or are they males, or was it, you know, your sister or what?
Well, it was my sister, definitely. Like I said, she was one of the first fighters I've ever seen. Seeing her start from nothing to where she's at now, I'm just amazed by her talent. She has beautiful boxing skills, even though we're two completely different fighters. I'm more like a brawler, she's the boxer. But one day I want to put it all together, and I want to have her boxing skills and have brawling skills and all. But I love her. Kodo, I like his style that he comes and he fights. Pacquiao, of course, I would love to be known as he's southpaw just like me, so I would love to be known as little Pacquiao, female Pacquiao.
Definitely, you got the aggression going. I was watching one of the clips that they had, your first round knockout. Let's get to this fight. You're fighting Kimberly Connor. Do you know anything about her? Have you scouted her at all?
Not really. I really don't care. I know all females are tough. So when I'm training, as if I was fighting Mike Tyson. It doesn't matter who they put in front of me. I fight hard. I train hard. So no matter who they put in, like I said, no matter who they put in front of me, I'm going to fight hard. I'm going to give it my all. And at the end of the day, I want to come home with that victory.
Do you have a Twitter?
She's a tough girl.
Yeah, you do have a Twitter, right? That people can follow
no.
you at? No, I thought you did.
No. No, I don't have a Twitter. I don't have a Facebook. I don't even have a cell phone.
What?
Wow.
Wow. Well, you're keeping it old school as a fighter, that's for sure.
Yes. I want to concentrate on my career.
There you go. Well, there you go.
You get like a cup with a string, and that's how people get a hold of you.
Yeah, that's how I speak to my neighbors. That's how I do. I let them know I'm fighting.
Well, good luck to you this Saturday. And this is at the Aviator Sports Complex, right, down in Brooklyn, right?
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, good luck to you and your first title shot. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, keep us updated.
Thank you so much. I hope. Yeah, no problem. I hope to be talking to you as the IBF champion the next time.
Yeah. Well, we're rooting for you. We're definitely rooting for you.
All right, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
There you go. You know, I got to just mention, I'm going to pass this to Fight Fans because Fight Fans are getting pissed off. They want to be on Leave the Ring. They want to talk to us. Boxing, upcoming fights, Klitschko, Adamick, Gamboa, Ponce de Leon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Really quick, though, before we move on.
What you laughed about?
Because, you know, some people are like, wait a minute. Did Gabe just patch in the female fighter, Mr. I don't watch female boxing?
Yeah. Why do you think I said that her promoter is one of the most persistent human beings I've ever met? It pretty much came down to, look, I'm going to break your legs. Get my girl on.
Get her on.
I was like, all right. Yeah, I'm like, all right. I mean, I kind of kept telling him, like, dude, I don't really cover female fighters. You know, I don't really, it's just not my bag, man. I don't like watching women hit each other. And he's like, send me a clip. And send me another email, send me a text. Like, look, you've had female fighters on your show before. I listened to your show. I'm like, all right, dude, you got me. And it is for a world title. So there you go. The women that listen to the show that always kind of get mad at me when I talk about female fighters, you can leave me alone now. I brought in a female fighter out of the show.
Ah, you softy. Let's batch in some fight, man.
I know. I got a soft spot for Puerto Ricans. What can I say?
I know. Jason Cruz, man, you're on live right now and Leaving the Ring. You want to talk Pacquiao, Marquez, and other things in boxing? What's up, brother? What's on your mind?
Yo, what's up, guys? A lot's on my mind, all right? But first of all, I got to blast somebody right now. Sorry I have to do this, but I'm going to do it on your show. This guy's from Cali, from the Wild Card Gym. Your boy Veins. I don't even know how to pronounce his last name. I'm going to call him Veins Wannabe Kardashian. Yo, this guy wants to be a So this guy wants to be a star. This guy wants to be a star. He doesn't want to fight anybody credible. I just read about how he rejected the fight with Angulo, which would have been his highest payday so far, and it would have set him up for a mandatory against Canelo. This guy talks so much shit, and then he has a chance to step up against Angulo, and he ducks him.
I haven't heard about that.
Baines, if you're listening to the show, bro, this is why nobody in the boxing world respects you, bro. Grow a pair of balls.
That's the thing. Fighters fight, you know, and this went down today, Dave, just a few hours ago, basically, this morning. Yesterday, I was actually a wild card a couple weeks back covering a fighter, and I ran into Vanessa's, That was her hanging up. I thought I just got disconnected. I ran into, you know, his manager, and I was all pissed. And basically, I didn't see any sort of confidence coming back from him that this fight was going to get made. The Canelo, or the Martirosyan is his last name. Vanes,
yeah, Martirosyan.
And Angulo. And here's the thing, you know, HBO is very, you know, they want to do November 5th in Mexico with Angulo. They want to do this fight. It's a career-high payday for Vanes. You know, I don't know all the ins and outs of the deal, but Vanes turned it down. Vanes decided, I want to do something else other than fight for a title eventually. To me, you know, fighters fight, and great fighters sacrifice. They don't hem and haw and worry about everything being in their favor. They go for it. And if you can beat, you know, if you think you're good enough to fight Canelo, who he's been calling out, and beat him, then you're probably going to have to go to Mexico to do that, or maybe Los Angeles, but you're still going to be in his neck of the woods, essentially, and probably, you know, it's a co-promotion, but everything's going to be in the champion's favor, as we've seen the WBC is for Canelo, then you should be able to beat the other number one contender. You know, you should be able to go to Mexico and beat Angulo. And here's the thing that drives me insane. Is there a better time than now to get Angulo? He's fought, what, a minute and a half in almost 2 years?
Right.
You know, like
14, Amen, Gabriel.
15 months? You know, I mean, come on. It just makes no sense to me. And
that is, that is one of the most...
He's a nice guy, but this is
That is one of the most disappointing things is you have a guy calls on numerous times and been everywhere in the media saying, I want this, I want to fight this guy, da-da-da-da, has the opportunity of a lifetime to shut somebody down and doesn't want to follow through. Vons, if you're listening, call in, brother. Let us know what's cracking, what's on your mind. I mean, who's giving you this advice? Is this off of, you know, off of what you think is better for yourself in the boxing? Because just like Peter Quillen, who's a friend of ours here, by saying, no, I don't want to fight Easter Shade Smith, he's lost a lot of credibility with fight fans. And
he went from being Kid Chocolate to Count Chocula.
Wow.
You know what's funny, bro? El Cubano, he's Cuban, and I seen him on YouTube fight, and I said, yo, this guy has serious skills. But yeah, man, when he ducked this guy on your radio show, bro, I lost all respect, bro. He got demoted from Kid Chocolate to Count Chocula.
You know, a lot of people were upset about how he was really kind of trying to go around why he shouldn't fight Easter Shade Smith. You know, Martirosyan, you know, I haven't read this, so I don't know all the details yet. I'd love to hear from him himself, from the horse's mouth, of why was this decision made of not going to Mexico and facing Alfredo Angulo. Gabriel, you're absolutely right. The guy only fights a minute and a half. You know, there was not a whole lot to tell there, and whether or not he can last 3 to 5 rounds. You know, I mean, does he still pack punch on Gulov? Yes, but this would have been a great opportunity for both men to see where they're at in stage of their career and where they can move forward with. Martirosyan, yeah. I'm just not getting it. I don't understand. I mean, you know what the thing is a lot of these fighters, they're getting this Twitter and Facebook twisted. They think, you know what, I got all kind of followers and blah, 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 so they're popular in the sport. But let me tell you something, and this is a cold reality. Fight fans are cheap. They don't like to pay for shit. Okay, the only way they're going to pay to see you is if you fight. And if you start fighting consistently, then that's when fight fans are going to go, oh, okay, it's for free to follow you on Twitter. It's for free to follow you on Facebook. Get their asses in the seats on the arenas or casinos to watch you fight. Then you can start picking and saying who you should fight.
Yeah,
that's where
that's
a lot
true.
Of these fighters get twisted. They need to
wake
up.
Listen, I got two more things I want to say. We don't have a whole bunch of time. First one, I'm gonna scan through this real quick because my second point, man, is where the real meat is at.
We actually just lost our 6 o'clock guest, so we actually do have a lot of time. We're good.
Go for it.
Okay. Well, this is the first one's gonna be on Mayweather. A little birdie told me that Floyd ripped the HBO people a new asshole because they didn't include footage.
I heard about that.
Yeah, they didn't include footage of Floyd actually went into a gift shop, bought like a crack pipe, and then got some Mexican to dress up in fishnets, and then they were like having other people pretending like they were cooking drugs, and so they were making fun of Oscar that way, and then he was sparring with 50 Cent in the ring, and then the last one was he bought a Bentley Cash at a dealer, and HBO was there, they made a big thing about it, but they didn't put that in. So what I heard from an inside birdie was that Floyd was pissed, and he told the people at HBO that they need to stop spinning that fucking woe is me Victor story. That shit is old, and people are already complaining about it. You know,
What should he care how they worry about Victor or how they portray Victor Ortiz?
Yeah, that was good at first, but it's old now. You know, it's like the same source told me that Floyd told them, he goes, yo, my father was locked up in prison. You know what I mean?
Well,
my mother was on drugs.
There
were seven of us.
Floyd,
there were seven of us in one
bedroom.
I got
news for Floyd. Hang on a second. I got news for Floyd. His act is tired. He's doing the same old shit on that show, from what I understand. I won't watch it. I've been reading people's breakdowns. Sounds like the exact same show on every time that Floyd's been on. He argues with his dad. Nobody knows boxing. This is how rich I am. Let me hang out with 50 Cent.
Or they
want to
know and this and this and that.
Who gives a crap? It's reality bullshit.
Yeah,
it may be.
It may be. It's still entertaining and it still sells fights. You know what I mean? I mean, how many people are you going to put on a seat when you got Victor saying,
only
oh, my dad don't love me. You know what? Nobody's fucking father loves them. Half the Latinos in the world, their fathers don't love
everybody's
them. They got beef with their father. But
why
the
does
story,
it have to
the
be
story,
on
like,
TV?
They keep spitting it, and it's getting old. You know what I mean?
Well, what else are you going to say about Victor Ortiz?
Yo, you know what's funny? I really liked Ortiz at the beginning of all of this. I really did, man. And I'm a big Floyd Mayweather fan, but I was like, you know what? Fuck it. If Floyd loses, he loses. That's the fight game. Yo, Victor,
you know what the problem
cool
is with
dude.
TV?
I met him in New York
and
City. He was humble. But, man, this 24-7, between the 24-7 woe is me Victor campaign and then Victor talking shit, which he's not good at, man. Fuck, now I feel like, man, I hope Floyd goes in there and whoops
his ass. Who cares about that stuff? That's the thing is reality shows, and really the problem with entertainment in this country is it starts with, like, sequels. It's like, let's just slap more and longer of the same bullshit. But really, I don't know about you, but I was perfectly happy with those long sequences they used to do before a fight began, or like the countdown shows, where it's just like all about the fight, the fighters, the styles, their career, and that's all I needed. I never asked for a
true.
Damn reality show. To me, reality shows are for stupid people, to be perfectly honest with you. They're for stupid people who don't know how to think for themselves, and that's what it takes.
Yeah,
to spend $60 on a pay-per-view is to watch that garbage.
Yeah. I mean,
then
I gotta,
really,
I gotta,
honestly,
gotta,
people should just put a gun in your mouth and euthanize you so you don't have
yeah,
kids
so you know
and
what?
Pass the stupidity on.
Yeah, Gabriel, I agree with you, you know, in that point. It's true, and I'm not trying to sound like an elitist either, but fuck it. I mean, I am smart.
I read, you know.
Me too. I agree with you on that, but see, this is the way I look at things two ways. All right, when it comes to boxing, I look at it as a fan, and then I look at it as a business person. I'm a small business owner, so I'm always thinking business.
Sure.
So I think that boxing has to start appealing on a broader scale. You know, so they're gonna have to reach out to people and do things that maybe the diehard fans we may not agree with, but the numbers have to get up. And you know what, I'm gonna say this, and I sound cruel, and God forgive me, and you guys, if you guys get mad at me, but let me tell you something, and I honestly believe this. And I got to give props right now to Richard Schaefer, because Richard Schaefer is a brilliant man, and he's doing a lot of good things for boxing, all right? And with that said, look, I believe that once Aram dies, and hopefully it's soon, because he's like 170 years old, but I think that once Aram dies, I think boxing will be a hell of a lot better off. I think what's holding boxing back is Bob Arum. And I think that
I don't agree with that at all.
I think Richard Schaefer has had some great ideas, and I think he's going to do some great things for boxing, you know, once Aram is out of the picture.
I think they're all the same breed of snake. You know,
I disagree. I think Bob Arum, the notion
and what
that
breed
he
is that?
Boxing back.
Come on, Gabriel, don't crush me, man. I want to have hope in somebody.
Man.
I'm sorry, but have you? What about Richard Schaefer or Golden Boy? Has cleaned up the sport? Has been any different than what Bob Arum's done? In fact, I've seen him do things that are worse, signing other people's fighters, like four of them. Being involved in that defamation suit where they. And also, like, bringing forth the blood testing thing. That thing that really bothers me, not the blood testing itself, but they had this big press conference, and we are here making a historical day of, Golden Boy fighters and Floyd Mayweather bringing in the blood testing. Has one Golden Boy fighter, other than, okay, Victor Ortiz and Shane Mosley, did it with Floyd, but they haven't done it for the rest of their stable. When you ask them about it, I was actually surprised Richard finally did talk to me about it, because there were no comment about the Mosley blood testing. I don't really see anything different from them. They're just the same, they're a snake oil salesman just like anybody else. They've been putting on good fights. They're trying to give us a good card with star power.
There you go. That's why I'm being biased.
But at the same time, Bob Arum's put on great shows for 30 years. And nobody, and I
don't know.
Disagree highly with anybody. Nobody
Dude,
developed
you know
talent like Bob Arum.
Yeah.
Well, they can take credit for Abner Morris, but really it was the Espinosas that developed Abner Morris. At some point, Golden Boy picked up with Abner, started putting him on shows, but it was Frank and Frank Jr. that developed that fighter, just bottom line.
Yeah. Man, let me tell you something. I was at the New York City press conference on Tuesday,
uh-huh.
right? And you guys can see me on HBO if you care to see it on the promo video. I got interviewed again by HBO. I was wearing a big red Mexican sombrero. And I use it as a marketing gimmick. I knew that they would approach me and ask me about on the fight and everything. But I'm gonna tell you the truth, man. I was scared as hell when I parked in Chelsea Piers going in with it, man, because it was like 150, 200 Filipinos. And it was only like maybe 15 Latinos in the whole place. I was like, Jesus Christ, these guys might throw me in the Hudson. But they were really cool. They were really cool. But in all honesty, man, I felt bad, man, for the Filipino fans that were there.
Why is that?
Because right in front, like, where we were at the back, right, of this, like, it's like a huge catering hall, right? And then there was like a gate, and it held us back. And we could see towards the stage, but Bob Arum put a stage before the stage where Manny and Marquez were, and the press was there, so the fans could not see Manny at all. I mean, you couldn't see them at all. All you could do is hear them. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, damn, I'm not a huge Pacquiao fan, but if I was a Filipino who idolizes this guy, I would be pissed at Bob Arum. I'm like, fuck, dude, you could have set the room up in such a way that the media could have covered them, and the fans would have had access to seeing these guys. And I was just like, damn, my impression of Arum is that he doesn't give a shit about the fans at all. Like, you know what? Fuck trying to make the fans happy. Screw giving them, trying to give them what they want. And then this is the messed up thing is when they were all leaving before, Nacho and Marquez took tons of pictures with the fans and signed a ton of autographs, right? When Manny walked by and Arum, they just blew right past everybody. Didn't even wave, didn't even take a picture. And I was like, damn, that's kind of fucked up because, say what you want to say. One thing that I was impressed when I went to the Mayweather-Ortiz press conference was when Ortiz was leaving, he took time, he talked to people, he said what's up to us, he took pictures with us. And then when Mayweather was leaving, he did the same thing. And this time I'm like, damn, what the hell's going on? Like, why couldn't Manny just take 2 seconds of his time and just take a picture or say something to the crowd
that
was right next to him?
I've seen Manny do that, and he was I didn't stick around.
I've seen him do
that
too, but I think he's a little bit more now cautious of doing it because of the whole drug testing. Everybody asks him, hey, when are you going to take the test? I think he's just uncomfortable now.
Yesterday when I did the press conference, he did get the hell out of there, but there wasn't a lot of fans waiting around by the time everything was done. It's like they kind of got their Manny fix and then they were gone. And it was a little harder to get into yesterday at the Beverly Hills Hotel. I don't think it was completely open to the fans. It was like a certain amount, and then and that was it. But, Bob has been on record as saying, who gives a shit what the fans think. And to a certain extent, I kind of agree with him sometimes because I think fans have a fantasy view of boxing that doesn't really go along with the way that the thing actually really works. But I can see what you're saying. He doesn't always give us the fights that I want to see. That's for damn sure. I never asked for the abomination known as Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., and yet here he is foisted on me by Bob Arum. But, so I'll give you that one. And he did give us Butterbean, though. So
let me give you the gold nugget. let me give you the gold nugget. Damn, I like Gabriel's raw, boy. This guy has a double-edged sword for a tongue. I thought I was bad. And this is a golden nugget. I have a friend, right? He's here from New York, from where I'm from, upstate. His name is Richard Schwartz. He's a New York State Cup man. So he got into the press conference. He used his credentials, and they let him in. So we were texting each other back and forth. I wasn't able to get in. But he comes back to me, and he's like startled. And I goes, Rich, what's going on? You have anything good for me? And he goes, man, listen, I was just talking to Aram, and I asked him who's Manny's next opponent. And Mike Jones. He said, Mike Jones is Manny's next opponent. And I was like, say it ain't so, Richard. And he goes, man, he said Mike Jones. I was totally shocked,
but that's,
man.
This is the thing, though, man, is people, Oscar did this for years, and Bob actually has used this trick a lot with
exactly.
Oscar. They would link themselves to a name in order to put Mike Jones in the conversation. They were talking about, Birdo for a second there. That's just promoter bullshit. I think people... That's what drives me crazy about the internet, and that, I won't name the particular site, but it's almost made for the Twitter feed, where you hear one little thing, and all of a sudden everybody's tweeting about it, like this rumor about Ring Magazine and Doug Fisher becoming the editor. He's just mentioning Mike Jones with Pacquiao so that you talk about Mike Jones and think about him as a guy that would be able to fight Pacquiao. That's all.
I don't know, dude. Look, if you look at it, who's left to fight Pacquiao? I predicted a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, that I saw Pacquiao eventually fighting Chavez. All right? I thought it was going to be at 54. Manny fought Margarito for a 54th belt. He's got Sergio Martinez's belt at 160. Chavez Jr. does. And I see Aram eventually setting up a ninth title fight at, like, the catch weight of 154.5 or 155, Pacquiao versus Chavez. Aside from that fight, which I believe is going to happen, you have Mike Jones, okay? And then you have the Cotto Margarito winner, which I'm taking. Let me tell you something, bro. Man, Margarito is going to mop the floor with Cotto again, this time without plaster.
I don't think he had plaster the first time.
Honestly, what I tell people, irregardless of that, Margarito didn't have no damn plaster in that chin, and he took some good shots, man.
Yeah, he did.
Knowing Aram, and knowing who else, right? Could he possibly face? He's not gonna face any of the. He's not gonna. Sure, not gonna face Berto because that's an Al Heyman fighter. He's not gonna face anybody in the Golden Boy stable, right? So who's left?
It's possible, actually, the Golden Boy stable, because that's kind of starting to thaw. They're making fights with each other or exploring it. Here's the thing, though. If you're not going to fight Floyd Mayweather, and granted the testing and that got in the way, but if Manny hasn't fought, like, a big, strong, athletic, or even a guy his size, athletic black dude with some speed and some funk to his game, he's not going to fight Mike Jones, who's bursting at the seams to become a 154-pounder. Whatever you think about Mike Jones as a fighter, that he's raw and he hasn't fought anybody yet, he's still a gigantic dude when you stand him next to Manny Pacquiao. There's no way. I will eat Dave's hat if they make that fight. This is not going to happen.
What kind of hot sauce do you like?
Hey, Jason, we got to put you on hold, brother. I got to pass in some other fight fans. It's always a pleasure when you call
all
in,
right,
man. But
guys,
I got
be good,
go.
Man. It was fun.
All right, bro.
Easy, man. The thing is, too, that Chavez Jr. fight that you mentioned, 154 and 155, there's no way that Chavez Jr. can make that weight. I mean, even if he did something crazy like, work out, or put the bonbons down and turn off Oprah, I think there's just no way that he can make that weight.
Who Manny's going to face next. I really don't care. To tell you the truth, I just don't care who he's going to face next. I've told you how my thoughts and my feelings about Manny Pacquiao now. I don't really see him as a fighter anymore. He's just sheer entertainment for his fans. That's about it, doesn't want to take real challenges. And the whole Margarito and Cotto thing is just to get him to to fight the winner of that one and move on. I mean, let's just be honest. He's not a fighter anymore. He's just doing it to continue banking the money he cans off of his fans, and that's all it's about. And let's patch into fight fans, man. Let's get CT wants to talk Klitschko, Adamek, and Gamboa and Ponce de Leon. You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Yeah, I just want to talk about the Adamek and Klitschko fight. To me, I think it's gonna be a pretty tough fight for Klitschko for the time it goes, because I think I've been watching Adamek through the weight classes. And as a heavyweight, he's very mobile as a heavyweight. Like, he knows his role as a heavyweight. He's not a big guy. I think he's going to give Klitschko a little bit of problems, but I think Klitschko will probably, like, break him down late and possibly stop him. But I think, you know, for his lateral movement and the way he fights, you know, going in and out, I think he should give Klitschko a bit of trouble at first.
You know, I expect him to give him a little bit of trouble just because he's more mobile than Vitaly. But Vitaly did impress me when he fought Chris the Nightmare. He was able to use his feet. I'm not going to say light on his feet, but he was a lot more mobile on his feet. He was able to get away from big punches. But I don't expect him to do that with Adamek. You know, smaller guy. I expect Adamek to really kind of force him to come forward, and then he's going to try to circle him and try to land some big shots. The thing, though, with Thomas is that He's gonna have to go in knowing he's not the big puncher that he once was. I don't really see him hurting Vitaly, because Vitaly has shown some really big. Sorry, that was my fault. Showing some real. He's been able to take some really heavy shots, you know. So I see a stalker against a guy that is a cruiserweight and is gonna give him some problems, but eventually he's gonna tire out just because of the pressure. Vitaly's gonna be using that jab, and not just the jab alone. He's going to lean that big old body of his on Adamek when he gets him close, because that's how they slow down the smaller heavyweights. If you notice with Vladimir and Vitaly, that's how they've been able to slow down the smaller guys, to kind of slow them down so they can break them apart. Is it going to be exciting? Oh, man, I don't know. I just think, to me, we're not going to find out until that second or third round, because it really depends on, is Vitaly going to allow him to Adamek to try to dictate with the movement, or is he just going to try to go for it, which is not his temperament. But I do see him stopping Adamek in the later rounds, man, just catching him with that hammer and stopping him. But it's going to be a good run for Adamek. I don't know, Gabe, what's your thoughts about that fight?
Yeah, it's not going to be exciting if Adamek knows what's good for him. You know, it's going to have to be – he's going to have to move in, he's going to have to move out. He's got to have to not be greedy, you know, use that double jab to get inside, maybe get to the body a little bit and get the hell out of there, or tie up. And when they tie up, he's got to make sure, yeah, the dude doesn't just lay all over him and use his weight, you know.
He should just go to a knee. You know what I mean? I mean, as soon as
the guy, wow.
I would go to, no, I'm serious. I would go to a knee, because he's going to lean on my shoulders and my neck. That's a big dude, man.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To kind of bear on top of you. I mean, you know, but.
So it's kind of like the Hack-a-Shack, you know, is basically what David Hayes created. You know, when they would just foul sack and make him go to the line because he couldn't make a damn free throw to save my life. You know, I don't know about the knee thing, but screw it. You know, whatever it takes to win a fight. But I think Adamek, he's got a shot. He's got an intelligence to him and
he
a willingness to do whatever it takes to win the fight. And that doesn't necessarily mean cheating. It just means if it's got to be boring and I just got to outpoint you, then I'm going to do that. And you got to remember, this is in a brand new arena in Poland. He's going to have a lot of Polish people there backing him up. He's going to have the crowd with him. And I wonder if that's going to affect the judges. I mean, and to me, looking back at that Vitaly's last fight, it didn't, you know, it lasted barely a round, but, you know, he looked a little bit ready to be taken. And I said that for the last two fights, and, I've been wrong, but those legs aren't the greatest. He's got a lot of miles on him, especially, he was a kickboxer before.
I don't know,
Gabe.
I got to disagree with you that. I don't think he's ready to be taken. I mean, if he is going to be taken, it's not going to be by Adamek. You know, I think if he's going to be taken, it's going to be from a bigger heavyweight, know. So I think he's able to afford to not have the greatest legs right now with Adamek, just because Adamek doesn't have that power or that weight to push him back and tire him out.
Yeah, and I think also Klitschko, he's a very dominant fighter, and the way he punches, he throws these, like, weird arm punches, and he kind of, like, leans his head back when he walks
right
to his head. So, I mean, like, he's very effective at what he does, and I think, he's going to wear Adamek down, in the later rounds, all that mobile type movement and it's going to catch up to Adamek later, like it almost did when he fought Areola. And I think this time, I think Crystal's going to, you know, get him late. And I also want to say on Gamboa, I said this about a month ago, on Gamboa De Leon. I give De Leon a puncher's chance, but I think, you know, his foot movement is pretty bad. And he kind of drags his feet when he punches. And I think, you know, Gamboa is just going to time him with a counter punch in between. And just, you know, I think he's going to wipe De Leon out within five rounds. I just think so.
That is a huge possibility. You know what? With Paul De Leon, man, this is my take about him is that he's got that punch that could really turn things around for him, but he's got to be really smart. You know, with Broner was the speed there was giving Ponce some problems, but the awkwardness of Ponce de Leon was giving Broner a lot of problems. The thing, though, with Ponce de Leon is that he's going to have to not be the aggressive guy. He's going to have to bite down and allow Gamboa to lead the dance. And the reason why I say that is because Gamboa likes to kind of dance his way in with his hands down, and he becomes super comfortable. Now, and that's going to be dangerous, too. It's going to be really dangerous because that's when he gets that rhythm, and then he wants to start throwing his hands and stuff. That's when Ponce de Leon should sit back and go, okay, let him catch his rhythm because he becomes sloppy, which is a little weird. You know what I mean? Because a lot of times when guys catch their rhythm, they start getting, you know, ooh, little herky-jerky and bang, 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 bang. With Gamboa, it's a little bit different. Guys have caught him becoming comfortable when he's walking in and trying to land those really sharp, fast combinations. That's when Ponce de Leon could catch him. The only problem is, man, he's got that real tough Mexican blood in him where he's like, yo, I want to bang with this guy, and I want to knock him out. And I think that's going to be the downfall for him is that he's going to walk in some really fast punches from Gamboa, and I think that's what's going to hurt him the most. But I say he's going to give us a scare, man. He's going to give the Gamboa fans a scare because he's going to rock them. You know, I could see him getting rocked, and I would not. And I'm going to say it again because I know some fans were like, yo, you crazy, D, you crazy. There's a big possibility he may upset El Cyclone. He could upset him. He's got the punch to do it.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, and De Leon definitely has he has a killer instinct when he has somebody hurt. So if he does get Gamboa hurt, he will finish Gamboa, and vice versa, you know what I mean?
And you know, and that's a great opportunity for Ponce too. Is that you know Gamboa's got that killer instinct, but at the same time he winds up, he gets really sloppy, and if Ponce can just maintain himself, man, and keep that composure, he could catch him again. That's the only way I could see anybody, you know, hurting or stopping Gamboa, you know, and putting him in that real bad position, which we haven't really seen him in. He's had flash knockdowns, you know, but to really get his legs on Queer Street, you know, is to wait for him to come in and Ponce to just land a big left or a right hook, because that right hook is a devastating hook that he throws, which is kind of weird because his bounce is just
it's weird.
Off. It's really off, man.
It's because going to say, though, when he fights Gamboa, I think he's going to see some hand speed that I think he's never seen before. So I think it might you know, set him back a little bit once he sees the hand speed that he's never really dealt with.
I don't know. I mean, he just saw Adrian Broner, who's not exactly slow. And he's a young guy that throws a lot of punches in combination. And I have to think, you know, and even Broner kind of intimated this, that he felt the guy's power, and it made him get a little careful. I think he's got real power and a real shot. Maybe just a puncher's chance, but he is like almost like a Randall Bailey. He's really refined that delivery system of his power. You know, it's a very simple 1-2, but it's a little bit awkward. It's at an angle that you don't quite catch. And I think it's a different guy than the guy that we saw get blown out by Juan Manuel Lopez. You know, reading like Steve Kim had a really nice interview with De Leon that was yesterday on Max Boxing. And they talked about that he was a little bit overconfident heading into that Juanma fight. He'd been knocking everybody out heading into that fight and thought, you know, I just touched this guy and it's over. And he just got blown the hell out. He's understood that now. He's kind of been to the mountain, fell off of it, and he's worked his way back. And I don't care what anybody says. I felt that the guy either got a draw or he beat, you know, Broner. I did not feel that Broner beat him. I think he knows how to deal with speed. And the flaws that Gamboa brings to the ring kind of play right into him. He throws very wide punches. He gets overly aggressive. He squares up. The chin raises up. I think he certainly is not favored to win this fight, and it's not 50-50, but I think he's got a really good shot. And if this thing gets past three or four rounds, I think he's got an even better shot. Because, again, Gamboa has a tendency to kind of burst, almost like a Berto, and then he'll spend a lot of time in space kind of figuring out what to do, and then he'll come back in. If he can't blow out De Leon, who's been knocked out before, and, you know, if he's starting to feel some of those punches coming back, very different fight. We got Gary Russell calling in right now, so I'll be right back, Dave.
Go right ahead. ACT, thanks, brother, for calling in, man. It's always a pleasure when you call in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
All right.
Yeah, I know some fight fans, man, are just not seeing this. They're saying Gamboa is going to get blown out pretty quick. I just have to disagree, you know. But, you know, I've been wrong before, man. It's boxing. You know, it's one of the most, you know, hardest sports to really predict what's going to happen. It just makes it fun to sit here and guess whether or not who's going to win or not. So we're back with our next guest. I'm believing we got Gary Russell back on the line or on the line.
Oh, Gary, if you have the radio on, you want to turn it down. I'm not sure if that does in the background.
No, I believe that might be you, not me.
Huh. What's up, Gary? How you doing, man?
Damn it, AT&T.
Hey, first off, man, hey, welcome to the show, and thanks for coming on, brother.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. I'm glad that you're having me.
Hey, you know, so how did you feel about your performance? I mean, you know, you're lightning hand speed, you were hitting on the button. How surprised were you that the guy was taking everything you were dishing out?
I wasn't really surprised at all. You know, we knew a tough opponent coming in. A lot of guys really didn't want to fight him because of his record. We knew he had a lot of knockouts. We knew he was a dangerous fighter. As far as my performance goes, I feel like I could have did a whole lot better. A lot of people didn't know I was really under the weather. I was sick going into it. You know, I had like a real bad sinus infection going into that fight that night, you know, and I was a little concerned about that, but we were smart enough not to really take any type of medicine for, you know, any medicine that kind of makes you drowsy and stuff before the fight. So we pretty much had to fight through it. But at the end of the day, we got the job done.
Let me ask you this, because your opponent wasn't announced until the week of fight week. Did that concern you a little bit? I mean, did you sit back and go like, yo, what's going on, man? I mean, why don't I have a name of an opponent right now so that I could be mentally prepared? Does that make it difficult for you when it comes to trying to bring your best abilities when you're being told not just a few days before fight time?
Yeah, let me give you the true story behind the situation. We were scheduled to fight another guy who was actually an orthodox fighter. We had sparring flu in, you know, and everything to get ready to prepare for a particular fighter. The guy pulled out at the last minute, and we had to get a replacement opponent. And the replacement opponent was Miranda, who was a southpaw. All the sparring and everything that we got was from the complete opposite side, you know. So it was a little shaky, mixed based on the fact that we didn't have much time to prepare for him. But I feel as though one of my best attributes is just being versatile in the ring, you know, being able to adapt to any style that you fight. I think a lot of it comes from my amateur pedigree, fighting in so many different tournaments. You don't really have a chance to prepare to see what guy you're fighting. If he's southpaw, he's orthodox, he's a brawler, he's a boxer, you know, you have to be 100% prepared and ready for whatever you get in the ring with. And just being mentally in tune with what goes on. So I'm blessed in that aspect.
I don't think I've ever seen anybody throw combinations as long as you throw, man. It seemed like there was a couple, like, 10-round or, you know, 10-punch combinations in there. Is that something that you work on? I mean, or is it just... Do you think that it's because you're fighting a guy that maybe it's slower than you and isn't exactly, you know, ready to throw back? I mean, so you're able to do a little bit more than you normally do. Where does that come from?
I think a lot of it definitely comes from just the training and just preparation in itself. I always like the great fighters like the Sugar Ray Robinson or the Mirza Taylors, you know, and I watch how they throw combinations, they punches and punches, you know, 5, 6, 7-punch combinations. And it was always it always amazed me at the end of the day. It's not about just winning. I think people lose sight of the fact that we're, other than us being boxers, we're entertainers, you know, and it's our job to entertain our fans, you know, and that's one of the ways that I was entertained, and that's how I want to give it back to the fans in my era.
Do you sacrifice a little bit of power for speed when you throw that many punches in combination, or are you learning right now how to kind of mix it up and change speeds and change levels of power as you're throwing?
I think we definitely learn how to change gears in the ring as far as speed and power. You want to be able to mix the two and units, you know, things should be flowing in perfect harmony as far as speed and power goes. In certain combinations, you sacrifice some power for maybe the first, the third, and maybe the sixth shot, you know, to be the ones with most power, you know. Some of it, I know if I shoot my right hook, it's going to push you over to my left hand. So I'll shoot my hook. I'll shoot my hook as more of a range finder to line you up for my left hand. So that's how you kind of offset the speed and the power. But
you kind of hide your power.
Exactly. You know, and most guys that get knocked out is some shots they really don't see.
Right.
You know, Gary, a lot of the fighters that are associated with Al Haymon have been kind of teared apart by fans and by writers or commentators people, you know, because of the stigma of Al being have an influence over HBO of getting softer oppositions for them. In your opinion, how do you feel about that? Are you a little afraid that that might happen where fans will turn against you the way they've turned against Andre Berto?
No, not at all. I believe everyone has their own cross to carry. I don't handpick opponents. You know, the guy that I fought was a very dangerous fighter. His record was, I think, 26-3 to 25 knockouts. Very dangerous fighter. Wasn't handpicked at all. Would not find a soft opposition. I want to be the best. In order to be the best, I'm willing to prove to everyone that I am the best by beating anyone that they put in the ring with me. I feel as though that's my job, that's my goal, and to always entertain the fans.
So let me ask you, so do you have a say of who you're going to face? I mean, if they came to you and gave you a guy that has, let's say, 20 losses and only 10 wins, and he's been knocked out his last three fights in the past, do you have a say of going, hey, no, I don't want to fight. I don't want to do that. You know, give me somebody worthwhile. Give me a test. Give me something why fans were going to come out to see me.
Most definitely. That's part of the contract agreement and everything. My dad, who is also my coach, we have a great deal of say-so in the opponent that we face and stuff of that nature. So, yeah, we definitely have to say so. I don't want to get hand-fed by you know, anyone. Like I say, I want to become the best. I want to show everyone that I am the best, and by beating whoever they put in the ring with me. I want to beat the guys who have these household names. I want to beat the Juan Manuel Lopez and the Yo-Yo Gamboa. These are the guys that I'm shooting for.
For you, you know, they were talking about this on HBO, Max Kellerman, mentioned this. One of the problems with you is that your skill level and your speed and everything is at such a high level that it's hard to find guys to fight you. And obviously, this last fight, it took forever to find you an opponent. Do you just at this point just say screw it and you just head to the top 10 and start fighting guys at that level, or do you think you need to take your time a little bit and get some more seasoning? I mean, you know, have you had all the questions that you need answered?
I feel as though I did have all the questions that I need to have answered. I feel as though I've been tested inside the ring in several different shapes and forms. But at the end of the day, that's not a decision that I make on my own. We make that decision as a whole. Me, my dad, my coach, my team, my management team. But me personally, I feel as though I'm 100% ready for these guys. I think one of the things that's going to be crazy is based on the fact that a lot of people speak on how advanced they say that I am to be where I am in my career. And I think one of the things that's going to be mind-boggling is more so the fact that when I do go in there with these guys that's supposed to be these household names or they're supposed to be a great fighter, and I make them look like a C-class or B-class fighter, I feel as though that's going to be the icebreaker. That's what's going to put me all the way over the top. I don't feel as though the guys that I'm going to compete with, I don't feel as though any of my fights will be competitive. I feel like I will always be 100% for free.
What is your assessment of Mikey Garcia? I mean, because when your name comes up, his name comes up as well. And Mikey Garcia. You know, it seems like you guys are kind of linked with each other or locked to maybe possibly face each other down the line. What are your thoughts about him? And do you think that you're ready for a Mikey Garcia right now in your point of your career?
I feel as I'm ready for anyone that they put in the ring with me. I'm being 100% honest. I feel as I don't want to come off as cocky or arrogant or
sure.
any other stuff, but I feel as though there's no one in my division, in my weight class, that is better than me, that's faster, smarter, or stronger than me in the ring, is more versatile than me in the ring. I feel as though me, as who I am as a person, is just 100% superior. Anyone who gets in the ring and feel like it's a possibility or they are going to lose, it's pointless for them to take the fight. I'm ready. I'm hungry. I'm dedicated. Man, God got my back. He's watching over me. I'm ready for whoever they put in the ring with me.
So who do you feel that would take you from prospect to contender? What opponent out there that you feel, Gary, that would take you to that next step, to that next level, to get closer to a championship fight?
Of course, as of now, Juan Manuel Lopez is one of the guys that I definitely want to see. I believe he's tailor-made for me. Stylistically, I think we line up perfectly. I think that'll be that guy. That'll be that stepping stone that shoots me over to the top.
What's interesting about you, and it's kind of rare these days, you see a lot of guys that are, you know, quote unquote style fighters. You know, they're well schooled, solid amateur background, but they don't like to get in there and mix it up. You know, I won't name any names, but the difference with you is you're very technically sound. You've got speed, but you like to be right there in the pocket. Is that something that you just grew up watching and said, I want to be like those guys, or is it a natural aggression that you have in your game?
I feel as though it's more of a. It's both. I think it goes hand in hand. Me as a just a fighter in general, I'm naturally aggressive. And then it also comes from the way that I've watched fighters fight. I see a lot of guys, they like to run around the ring, dance around the ring, you know, and win fights with. Though I'm more up close and personal type guy. Not a brawler. I wouldn't call myself a brawler, you know, because I'm a good boxer. I feel as though I'm well founded. I can do everything. I feel as though I'm a really good boxer, a good boxer puncher. I can go inside if necessary. I can stay outside if necessary. I feel as though I'm well prepared. I'm well rounded. I'm well grown in the sport. It's always room to grow. I'm still trying to find things to polish up.
I tell you what I like a lot about you, Gary. And you know, it's when you see prospects or contenders nowadays, you see a lot of the fundamentals are not really polished, and they're not following through the basics. You use a lot of the basics, and you're really polished. It was really kind of hard to pick of what you were doing wrong and what you were not doing right. There was a lot of things that you were just doing right, and there was a lot of reasons why a lot of fans, including myself, are excited when you got on HBO. The one thing that I did take notice is that I could see it, and tell me if I'm wrong, in your eyes, I see you doing a lot of – there's a lot of thought process. You know, there's just not punches being thrown. And it looks like you're looking at particular things to try to capitalize. Do you think, though, that in the, that might be your downfall? Because some fighters end up getting caught into that moment too much where they overanalyze stuff and they don't pull the trigger.
I don't feel as though that I overanalyze certain things. I feel like that I'm right where I need to be. I feel like in a fight, I'm trying to break it down to you. I'm always 3 or 4 steps ahead of the guy because of how I analyze the fight in my head. I know, me being a southpaw, I know if I were to shoot, if I'm fighting a regular conventional fighter, I know if I was to finish my combination with my right hook, I automatically know that my right hook lines me up with his right hand, with his straight right hand, which is his power punch. So I'm already 3 steps ahead. I know the combination I'm going to throw before I throw it. Okay, so I throw my 1-2, and I finish with my hook. I'm already 3 steps ahead based on the fact that I know what position that I'm in, and I know the only punch that he's available of throwing effectively, which is his right hand. So I'm already aware of what I need to block or what I need to counter before I even throw the punch because of my body positioning. You know, so it's little stuff like that that people really don't understand about the boxing game. You know, just the signs of it. I feel as though that is one of my best attributes of this sport.
It's pretty rare. It's a rare combination. You know, we don't want to turn this into some sort of, you know, love fest or whatever thing, but, you know, it's rare to get a guy that has your skill but has your willingness to get in there. And like, I was talking with, I don't know if you know him, Doug Fisher from The Ring yesterday, and we were talking about that he said, you know, he's an older guy on the beat. You know, we talk about things to look for in fighters. And he said on some level, the really good fighters have just got a streak of badass in them, that there's a little bit of, you know, willingness to go in there and inflict pain and that they kind of want to. And, you know, don't take it as a bad thing, but that's always what I've gotten from you whenever I've seen you fight, is you seem a little pissed off or a little willing to go in there and you want to do some damage to this guy. And too often, you know, I'm starting to see, like, all these guys turning down fights today that'll get them title shots or put them in good position for this reason or that reason. I get the sense from you that we're not going to have that problem.
Oh, not at all. realistically, boxing is a brutal sport.
Yeah.
You have to be a 100% man to do this sport. You know, you have to be 100% man to do this sport. It is brutal. It is dangerous. And the ultimate win in boxing is to knock your opponent out. You know, that says enough right there. You know, so it's definitely dangerous, definitely brutal. So you have to have your mind keyed in on war. We're modern-day gladiators. We're modern-day gladiators without just going out there with 100% just brute strength. We're calculated. We're calculated warriors. We're calculated gladiators. That's how I look at it. And I have to take that mindset into the ring.
Hey, Gary,
you know, a lot of fight fans are asking right now, is that Twitter that you have, is that your account? Is that really you?
Yes, it is.
There you go.
Yes,
you know, what's funny is that we're always asked when we have a fighter on, because there's so many people out there that like to pose as the fighter, you know what I mean, and they end up stirring up some stuff that it turns out to be. It's not the fighter.
You know, that does happen. Actually, it happened to me before. I think on a couple of Facebook pages, you know, people were thinking that it was speaking to me, and it was not me at all, you know. So it's things like that you definitely have to watch out for.
And you know what's funny is that you're right, because I think I got like 3 Gary Russell with your picture on my friend list on Facebook, you know. But hey, man, it's to reach their own, I guess, right? You know, they want a little piece of the Gary Russell movement right now. That's what it is, brother.
Yeah, man.
When do you think you're gonna be fighting next?
I'm not really sure. You know, I get married the 24th of this month. I'm gonna take a little time off, maybe in the October, early November. And maybe cool. The time question of what I'm looking at.
Right on. Well, we look forward to it, man. Thanks for taking the time out, and we'll catch up with you next time.
All right, man. I appreciate you guys having me, and glad that you like what you see.
All right, man.
There you go, brother. Take care, man. Thanks for coming on. I'm leaving the ring.
All right, man.
Well, there you go, man. The young prospect, Gary Russell Jr. I know a lot of people are very high on him. I'm excited to see him, too. I mean, I got to tell you, he's definitely he's got a future in the sport. Just got to continuously see him be consistent in the ring. Let's patch in some fight fans, man. Fight fans have been on hold patiently. Nesto, ¿qué pasó? You're on live right now and leaving in the ring.
Man, bro, I felt like I was never getting on.
You know how it is, man. It's crazy here on Leaving the Ring, brother. What's cracking?
Nah, I definitely understand, bro. Just sad I couldn't break that Vanez news first, man, because, boy, was I disappointed. You know, because...
I just seen on his Facebook, though. He said that it's all BS. He said that Golden Boy has not even offered him a contract for that fight. So he's like, how can I... Not go move forward with it. I try to call him too, on a cell phone, but it's off. And I'll try to get a hold of his publicist. But as of right now, he's putting it on his Facebook that it's not true at all of him backing out the Angulo fight.
Man, I don't believe that. I am going to go with Eric Gomez, who was quoted, and I believe the Boxing Scene article was. Boxing Scene talking to him. I mean, he has no reason to lie. And Vanez was just talking about that.
I don't believe everything I read on Boxing Scene. No.
But
not to trash yet another website in 2 weeks, but I don't always believe everything that's on there. A lot of times it's just rumor. But I've heard the rumor in several different quarters that I really do trust. And I don't believe Vanez's Facebook thing. I mean, there was the fight that, you know, from people I've heard at HBO to the WBC, Steve Kim was really right on top of it, talking to his manager last week or 2 weeks ago. This was the fight that people were talking about, that HBO definitely wanted. The numbers I was hearing, I'm not going to get into it, but it was apparently career-high payday. I don't see how you don't do this fight. Maybe he didn't get to see the contract, but from what I understand, the management did, and the offer was made to him. I mean, I'd love for him to come on and tell me how wrong I am. We'll work on it. But, yeah, I don't understand it. Fighters fight. Take the fight.
That just concurs with everything the article said. I mean, they said they offered him his career highest payday. They said they offered him neutral officials. The fight was going to be in Cancun. The fight was already approved and going to be televised by HBO. And they also offered him a guaranteed shot. The winner was going to get a guaranteed shot at Canelo.
Canelo,
and,
right.
And in my eyes, I don't see why he would turn it down when he's on Twitter 24/7 saying how he smacked Canelo next time you see him, how he's begging, you know, he's dying for Angulo to take the fight, that he just wants to prove who he is. But that all boils down to basically the entire show tonight where these guys are getting on and they're basically biting off more than they can chew. And here we have a classic case where the guy gets what he wants and now he doesn't want it. Same thing for John Molina. I'm not saying he's going to back down, but I was dying to get on when he was on because his biggest name to date is Hank Lundy. And then he went on hiatus. I mean,
I don't ever begrudge people trying to be great, though. You know, I mean, I understand what you're saying that he kind of disappeared for a second, but I don't begrudge a guy that because I think John would take that fight.
I didn't say he wouldn't. I said I think he would. I just don't think he's ready. And not only that, Brandon Rios has no need. Brandon Rios right now is like the Mayweather and Pacquiao of that weight class, not literally putting him in that stratosphere of a superstar, but in that weight class, he's the hot shit. Why would he go backwards to fight a prospect? Because John Molina's still a prospect. He hasn't knocked off any good names yet besides Hank Lundy, who hardly made a name for himself. I mean, Hank Lundy is still on ESPN. He hasn't even fought a Showbox fighter, and he's talking about getting a shot with Brandon.
Yeah, actually, you got to make a correction there. He's still on ESPN because he got knocked to the point where he's stuck on ESPN because of John Molina. That was a guy that was, if he'd have won that fight with Molina, he might have risen up and been on Showbox or, you know, maybe get to a Showtime level. He got stuck there because John put him there.
Yeah, and
you don't have to give Don credit there. I mean, to me, it's interesting to me that the fight fans, you know, I'm not dogging you, but it's like, damned if they do, damned if they don't. If a guy turns down a fight on HBO for a career-high payday, we all trash him. But then a guy like Molina, who we're saying, well, you didn't go anywhere and you haven't done anything after the Lundy loss, is looking at getting a shot or wants a shot with a guy that's higher up, we trash him for trying to be better than the level that he's at. I mean,
No, Gabe, I'm not trashing him. I just don't like when guys want to jump the ladder. Earn your way, earn your right. If Brandon Reels picks you, then, you still earned your right because he picked you. But you can't be calling out a guy when you haven't done enough. That's all I'm saying. I mean,
there's a gulf between who do we need to see John Molina beat in order to have him ready for Brandon Reels?
Right.
Okay, the winner of Linares DeMarco. He won't beat Linares. We've seen him get his ears boxed off by Hank Lundy, and Hank Lundy would have won that fight. Hold on. Hank Lundy would have won that fight. He would have won that fight had he not started playing games, because you've seen him.
But he didn't. But John put pressure on him, walked through his shots, and knocked him out. That's the way the fight went. I mean, if he was 6 foot tall, he'd be 6 foot tall. I mean, we could play one up all night.
I don't think it was the pressure. I don't think it was the pressure. I do.
I think the wheels came off the wagon there mentally.
Hank was slowing down when Molina was pressuring him. What fight were you watching?
Or Lundy put his hands down like Nate Campbell in front of Robbie Peden. John threw a Hail Mary right hand. It landed, and he knocked him down, and then he finished him. He could have easily not finished him and just gotten that knockdown, and things would have gone Lundy's way on the scorecards. But John finished. You got to give him credit. You can't just say Lundy just put his chin out there and let it happen.
I do give him credit, but we also have to note that Hank Lundy was showboating to get knocked out.
I don't agree with that, but let's not belabor the point. But here's the thing. You mentioned, the Linares and DeMarco. Now, DeMarco's been at 135 for a while. Linares is just entering that stratosphere in that weight class. The way I look at John and the way I look at Brandon, and they both said this to me, is that they're only like one or two fights, maybe one at the most, and they're out of that division.
Right.
I kind of look at them, even though John has not taken full advantage of his opportunities and his momentum at 135, they're both about to become 140-pounders.
There's no way they could stay. That's why I said these guys have really outgrown that division with their body size. They're big. They're big kids,
And I think the reason too that Golden Boy is fine with Linares fighting DeMarco is that DeMarco's not thought of as a puncher. John's a puncher, and Linares has been knocked out by one punch in the first round. I'm not sure if they make that fight, to be perfectly honest. I think Linares is way more skilled in terms of boxing skills and his slick eye, but I think Golden Boy wouldn't make that fight. They kind of look at John as high risk, low reward. That's kind of what he is, because he's got that right hand.
That is what he is.
And Brandon's got questionable defense. It's a little sneakier, a little better than people realize, and he's a lot smarter in the ring than people realize. But he's still there to be hit. I don't know. I mean.
There was talks of a Linares Brandon Reels fight, and I guarantee that gets made if Linares wins this vacant belt, because it just makes no sense for a champion to go backwards. I mean, Brandon Reels could.
But we do still have to do that, though.
That's the thing, though. Fighters fight. They fight. That's what they do. That's what they should do. Because these guys fight so little and fight 2-3 times a year, we want every one of their fights to be the Super Bowl. And we freak out when it's a guy that's quote-unquote not on their level. I just want to see a good fight. And I think stylistically it's a good fight.
It is a good fight.
I don't have a problem with it.
No, it is a good fight stylistically, but he hasn't earned his shot, and nor would it do anything.
Nestor, how does that make any sense? It is a good fight still stylistically, but he hasn't earned his shot. I mean, so I don't get it.
Because
I mean, if it is a good fight stylistically, then let it happen. Forget the earn part. Throw that out the door. I want to see a good fight. You want to see a good fight. Stylistically, you know it's going to be a good fight. So the earn part doesn't even come into play anymore. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I think that we're giving these champions too many reasons to cherry pick, and then we complain about it. You know what I mean? Let Brandon Rios fight some of the tough fights out there, and unify the title. Sure, why not? But it doesn't mean you're going to get good fights out of unifying the title. As fight fans, we tune in to see good fights, not a guy collecting senseless titles that you can just burn in a trash can. But that's my opinion.
No, and it's a good opinion, but at the end of the day, don't you think a fighter fights, to get in the Hall of Fame or be known as the greatest? I mean,
they pretty much fight for money.
Aside from paychecks, though, everybody wants to have their name remembered, you know, and nobody's going to remember you for knocking off John Molina, because no one knows who's John Molina.
If it's a great fight, he'll be remembered.
But here's the thing, though.
If it's a great fight, he'll be remembered. If it's a great fight, it will be remembered. I mean, let's talk about Diego Corrales and Jose Luis Castillo. A lot of people.
2,000 people there.
Yeah, a lot of people are not in tune in that fight, and guess what? It's remembered. That's boxing there. Just because the guy has a belt and just because the guy has a name, it doesn't mean it's going to be said to be a historical moment. We've seen that in boxing. It's literally the smaller guy with a smaller name, not the smaller guy, but a guy with a smaller name and a smaller draw that ends up giving us those real rememberable fights.
And DeLeon and Soto turned out to be an epic fight that no one was expecting.
No one's talking about it no more.
He got knocked off in 3 rounds by Brandon Rios, where it took Humberto Soto 12 rounds in a war.
Ray Charles could have called that fight. I mean, seriously. I mean, the only thing that surprised me is that. Well, I thought it would go 6 rounds and Urbana would get knocked out. So I was a little surprised it only went 3, but, I mean, we all knew what that fight was. Urbana, right. It wasn't that Urbana had earned his way there. I mean, he'd earned it in that he'd put a lot of miles on his body and was going to be an easy victim for Brandon Rios. To me, fight fans always want to put good fights on layaway. You know, they're like, well, this guy's at this level, and so these are the guys got to earn their way and deserve. It's about good fights. At the end of the day, you know, like, Wolak Rodriguez, that's a fight we'll always be talking about because it was a hell of a fight. Those guys aren't, you know, on pay-per-view level or any other level. You know, and actually, I'm glad that you brought up the Soto-Antion fight because for the guy earlier that was saying Bob Arum kills boxing, when the main event of that card fell apart, Bob Arum just, you know, it was Chavez Jr., strangely enough, who was probably too fat to show up or lazy, and donuts or something. I love to get to take shots of the kid. I really do.
I've noticed that.
But Bob Arum decided to put that show on anyway, and most promoters would not have. You know, it was a Latin Fury show. He decided, you know what, I'm going to probably eat some money on this one, but these guys deserve to fight, and it's a hell of a fight for the fight fans. And so Bob Arum went ahead and did it. And I would ask the fight fans to tell me another promoter that does that on a regular basis. Not many. So that notion that Bob's killed boxing, in a lot of ways, he's kept it going as well.
I don't know, but tell me, I mean, of course you guys are not going to agree with me because clearly you think it's a great fight, but stylistically, on paper, the way they both fight, it makes for a great fight. But if Brandon Rios goes in there and cleans him out like he did on DeLeon, then what? He's not going to get any credit for it.
Well, that's the whole thing. We got to find out if they fight. That's how we find out. You know what I mean? That's the way. Look, I really hate to have fights won on paper or to make suggestions of whether it's not. That's where we're saying, hey, fight. Make it happen, and then let's see the outcome of it. There's plenty of fights we thought that were going to be great, and a lot of them we were like, perfect example, Bradley versus Alexander. How many people thought that was going to be a great fight? And guess what?
Right.
It turned out to be a shit fight. That's how we find out what are the gems and what are the ones that deserve to be put in a garbage disposal and grinded up into little pieces.
Nah, see, I don't complain.
We always
complain
look at these quote-unquote.
We don't complain about
the quote-unquote meaningful fights, you know, the fight fans want. And you're absolutely right, Dave. It's about styles. And we even said it on this show. Stylistically, Bradley Alexander, not that good of a fight. It could actually be kind of crappy. And it was. And,
yep.
You know, you're talking about how you know nobody's going to remember Rios and Molina if they fight. And not to beat the total hell out of this dead horse. But a lot of people think about Roberto Duran when they look back in history and they say, you know, particularly the Floyd Mayweather apologists will say, well, Duran jumped from lightweight to fight Sugar Ray Leonard at welterweight. And they forget about all the little fights that he had in between as he acclimated to welterweight. I think it was like 7 or 8 fights. He took a gradual progression to lightweight. Fight fans have a very selective memory about things, but if you look at Roberto Duran's record, Sugar Ray Leonard's record, Sugar Ray Robinson's record, or Henry Armstrong, there's a lot of guys that were, quote-unquote, not on their level, but they ended up having pretty good fights with, and they're there along the way. Fighters fight. They should fight more often, not less often, waiting for that perfect opportunity. And it drives me crazy. Like, it's like Vonis. Well, this deal might get me a title shot, but I'm not quite sure if I want to go to Mexico or whatever the deal is. Someone to pass and wait for another good opportunity. No. Real warriors just get it on, and they bet on their own greatness. And that's how we get great moments in the sport.
The Vanes fight is not a comparison to the Molina Rios because the Vanes fight is what Molina needs to do. Fight a top contender, beat him, then come up to the champion. Not just jump all the people who've been working hard. That's all I'm saying. That's the only problem I have with it.
Yeah, but if you look at Vanes' record, he hasn't been particularly active. He hasn't really beaten... I mean, a lot of people thought he lost to Kasim Uma. I mean, he beat Ninjo Green, Vladimir Hernandez. I don't know if you watched that fight, but that was a senseless beating of a fat guy in Canada. And then he made Saul Roman look like a world beater. And what was basically was a WBC silver light middleweight title, whatever the hell that means. We're saying that fight's better, that career path is better, when really Vonis, he fought twice last year, he's barely fought twice this year. You know, he's not been particularly active, only like, you know, he fought 4 times in 2009, but they're not against names that we would go crazy about. I mean, when your biggest name is Kasim Uma and Saul Roman, and the next biggest name you've got is Billy Lyle, you know, is that really a guy that should be fighting the champion? Even the champion in his weight division, who the hell did he beat to get his belt? This is just
no,
a business.
No.
And the bottom line is, what fights are good for the fight fans? And Home Depot Center, Southern California, Rios vs. Molina, sign me up. That's how
I'm gonna watch it too, but Vanes adding the Angulo name to his already resume has put together a better resume to face a champion. Because Angulo's
this,
not a
though.
Champion.
Who is Alfredo Angulo beaten for you to make that statement? He doesn't even have 20 professional, he barely has 21 professional fights. One of them is a loss to Kermit freaking Cintron. His best win is Joel Julio,
yeah.
who has never really beaten anybody. He's just been kind of the open car of his generation. Good enough to compete and just good enough to lose.
So you don't like Angulo?
I love Angulo. I think he's a very exciting fighter. But you can rip apart anybody's record, like I just did in his in about 2 moves. You know, I mean, you could make the argument, who did Angulo ever beat to get a title shot? The bottom line is that Angulo is exciting, he's good TV, and he sells a lot of tickets. That's why he's in that position. Really, you know, I mean, it's not on merit, really. You really look at his record. And that's what it comes down to.
I can't argue about that. You're absolutely right. You definitely made a great point there because I can't think of a bigger name than Joel Julio on Angulo's record, except Kermit Cintron.
I traveled to Mexico to go see the guy. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not trashing him. I don't look at the sport the same way. I mean, I look at it from a business standpoint and from an entertainment standpoint because that's what this is entertainment. And for me, I'd rather see two guys with limited defense but, you know, really good offense go at it. than two stylists who are going to kind of, you know, dance around the ring or whatever for the most part in a chess match. It's boring. And really, I mean, just the financial responsibility or the realities of it. I don't know about Molina if he sells a hell of a lot of tickets, but I know he's certainly crowd pleasing, and he has fought in Southern California a lot, so regionally it does make sense. I don't know. I mean, I sound like I'm his PR guy here, but I it always bothered me, this whole idea of earn. You know, this guy needs to earn the right to fight, you know, Floyd Mayweather. And Floyd would act that way, but then so we see Ortiz. He's only gone 12 rounds once, which is his first world title. The first defense of his title, which most guys that get a title defend against a soft guy that they know they can beat. It's kind of their reward for winning the title. He's fighting Floyd Mayweather. Is there anything about Victor Ortiz that says he can beat him other than maybe his power?
Not really.
That's the
difference that I brought up, that it's different when a champion picks you. When a champion picks you, you're not going to say
Floyd's
no because
not a champion.
Floyd's
he doesn't
not
have a
champion.
Belt.
You shouldn't even be saying that because you don't even believe in belts.
I'm just saying, you were bringing up, you know, the champion picking you. Floyd's not the champion. He's just a name, which actually speaks to my
a
point.
Big
it's just about a business.
He hasn't
sold out his fight in Vegas, so I'm starting to wonder just how big that name really is. It's only sold half of the seats. Probably most of those have been away to Al Heyman and his ticket broker business.
Yeah,
there's actually already emails going out about that fight where you get a couple free tickets if you rent a room.
Rent a room, yeah. Actually, yeah, I see
yeah.
that. Hey, Nestle,
what,
brother,
for
I got a
quick... Ortiz fight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the Ortiz
Man,
fight.
Send me that link. I'll be there in a heartbeat.
If you gamble in, it's like, you know, if you're part of the Players Club or whatever, if you gamble on a regular basis,
Neither one of you guys going to go to the Gamboa fight?
We got our camera guy and one of our writers that are going to be covering that fight for us. They got ringside.
I was going to be there live. I was hoping to meet up with you guys, at least say hello and finally meet you guys in person. But
I guess you guys are
strictly West Coast, huh? You guys strictly West Coast.
No, not even, man. We're trying to make our way over there. But the economy, man. The economy's bad right now.
Alex,
Dave is living
in the ring, and Match Boxing has an East Coast rep out there, Alec Kohut. So he's going to be covering the fight out there.
I understand the economy issue. That's why I'm not going to the Ortiz fight. It's just too much.
Pretty bad.
But I got to turn
right back around and go to the Pacquiao-Marquez fight, too. A lot of people think, you know, Dave and I are just rolling in tons of money and strippers, but that's just really not the reality.
Where does strippers part come out of?
Just the strippers.
Hey,
just the strippers.
Thank you, brother.
If there's strippers, count me in.
I know, man. If there was strippers, I didn't know anything about it yet. You know what I'm saying? Hey, bro, I'm going to put you back on hold, man, because we got a lot of callers waiting to get on leaving the ring, man. Thanks again for calling in,
no
brother.
No problem. All right.
Strippers. Oh, yeah. It's been a minute since I've been a
stripper guy. We'll just move on.
Yeah, exactly, man. It's funny because people think we're rolling with cash and we're not. And then, like, I got one guy, you know, are you going to do this? Let's do this. You just bought a magazine. Look, man, investments take a lot out of your wallet, you know, a lot out of your wallet. Me and Gabe, I met up with Gabe in L.A., and we had a way for people that were leaving their tables and leaving half of their beer, and then we sat there and drank their beer. We were that broke.
It's really sad. I started crying at one point. It was just sad.
This dude had a pack of cigarettes, and all the packs in the cigarettes were half. And then get this, I go, hey, man, let me have a drag really quick. He said no. He's like, man, you go bum around for these cigarettes.
For these refries.
These refries, yeah. Let's patch in Matt, who wants to talk about Philly fighters. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and leaving in the ring.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on live, brother. What's going
on?
Damn,
just saying what's up with y'all.
Just chilling, bro, you know, talking boxing here, man, and See, in a minute, we're going to put up the fight schedule and talk a little bit about the fights that happened on Friday and Saturday, man. What's on your mind, man? What you want to talk about, bro?
We're getting a little bit closer to October 15th. We're just getting these Philly fighters ready. What y'all thinking? What it's looking like?
Philly fighters?
On October 15th, we got B-Hop, Danny, and they're supposed to put Dynamite on their crew, too.
Oh.
Oh, okay. These Philly fighters. You know, man, that fight is there's a lot of people not talking about that fight, about Dawson Hopkins, and I really like that fight. I'm going to be there. I mean, it's, you know, it's Staples Center, so it's like 5 minutes from my house, but, you know, I haven't broke down a hell of a lot of tape, and we're hoping to get Manny Stewart on next week. I haven't really had a long time to sit down and really break it down with him, but I'm kind of I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Dawson beats him.
I'm picking Dawson to beat him, to tell you the truth. I mean,
right?
I am. You know, I'm really leaning with Dawson right now. I shouldn't have said I'm picking him right now, but I'm leaning with him a whole lot. You know, just the styles make fights. And, you know, Hopkins has had his great runs, and he's been able to really maneuver his career the way he's wanted to be. And I think Dawson, just because he saw that loss, and I think that he's going to bring out the best out of Chad, man. I think that Chad, this style, it makes a lot of sense for him. Hopkins has spurts, and, you know, he leaves pockets, and he leaves enough pockets for you to put your hands in them and take what he's got. And I think Chad can do that, you know. It's going to be at the Staples, and you're right. There's not a lot of folks talking about that fight, and that could be a little bit because of Chad Dawson. His demeanor and his personality, man, it's just not a sticker. It's not a draw. You know, Hopkins really is going to have to be the guy to sell this fight. And there's a lot of fight fans that are just kind of fed up with Hopkins a little bit, which I'm not. I'm a Hopkins guy. You know, I like Hopkins. I like when a guy gets on and chops it up with you and he kind of schools certain people when he talks about the sport of boxing. But for some reason, there's some fight fans, man, that just really turned off Bernard Hopkins. But I think it's going to be a great night for Chad, man. I just see him being able to do the things that we've all seen but not have given him credit for.
The fight has, like, to me, potential to be really, really good, or, you know, Hopkins' fight, which is, like, just kind of slower paced. You know, the offense is going to be at a premium. But I think because of that Pascal loss, everybody really fell off Chad Dawson. Like, oh, he's just, you know, he's not that good, or he's vulnerable, this and that. I think he's really got the potential to do this thing. And we're going to kind of find out in this fight, is he a guy that has a lot of potential and he never fulfills it? Or is he going to be, like we've been kind of talking about tonight, is he going to dare to be great? Is he going to go for it and let his hands go and take it to Hopkins? And there's a thing about Hopkins and Mayweather that I think is very similar, in that they not only know how to physically drain you, but mentally they take something out of you. The guys are just very tense mentally, and it translates into tension physically, and they burn a lot of energy kind of just freaking out about how to deal with these guys. They're not, you can't really hit them clean once, much less twice, much less really three times in a row. You know, combinations on them don't really land often.
Right.
And that's very frustrating, and it's a rare guy that can deal with that throughout a fight and not freak out and just kind of stick with their plan and be consistent. Dawson, to me, like I think we were talking about it before on the show, that no matter what trash Hopkins seemed to talk to him, and Hopkins had bragged beforehand that the warfare will begin at the press conference, Chad was just kind of looking at him like, yeah, okay, can we take the picture now and then we'll go? You know, and they even left the press conference early, him and Gary Shaw. They had a plane to catch. He just seemed nonplussed. He just
not moved. Right.
No, not at all. Like, oh, really? Okay, cool.
See, that's why I say do that. You know? That's going to mess up Bernard Hopkins, because Hopkins really does like you to kind of come after him. So he capitalizes on your mistakes. With Chad, you know what? I think he's going to get a little impatient, zealous, and he's going to have to lead. And I think that's going to be his downfall with Chad Dawson. Because you know what? I don't even think the guy gets excited on his birthdays, man, to tell you the truth. So, you know what I mean? I mean? He's probably one of those guys that asks for a particular thing for Christmas, gets it, you know what I mean, opens it up and goes, oh, okay, cool, thanks, man, and puts it away. And he's feeling like shit, like, did he want this? Did he really want this present? I mean, he did put it on the little slip and put it in the hat, right, for Santa Claus, Secret Santa Claus Day, right? I think that's just Chad in a nutshell, man. He's a real laid-back guy, and he transcends that back into the ring, and I think that's what's going to frustrate Bernard Hopkins. I think Bernard Hopkins is going to beat himself in that ring rather than Chad Dawson. Chad is just going to just end up capitalizing on a guy that's going to be impatient, because Bernard's got a lot of energy for an old cat. He's got a lot of energy.
He certainly
a
does.
A lot of energy.
What do you think that Chad can do to stump Bernard?
I'm sorry, Matt. What did you say?
He's a southpaw. He's tall. He's athletic. He's got speed to him. He's about the same size. Seeing them stand next to each other, there wasn't a size difference. I don't think Chad's afraid of him. I think that's his greatest strength. You know, these other guys, Pascal was like, he's more jittery than me on, like, 6 cups of coffee. I mean, he's just, you're a cheater. Oh, I don't really know what to say. Like, freaking out. And in the ring, you could see it. There was just tension all over him. It was fear just oozing off of him. And with Dawson, I think that's a great strength, is that he just doesn't seem intimidated. He's not trying to, like Victor Ortiz is doing with Floyd, with, you know, well, I'm going to do that too, bro. He's not trying to play the same game and win it. Chad's going to play his game. And that's how he's going to try to win. He's not going to try to do Hopkins better than Hopkins, and if that makes sense, you know. And so I think those are strengths. Now, you know, the thing that makes me wonder, and Dave brought this up before, is he going to fight like a Manny Stewart fighter, or is he going to fight like himself? That's a big question. And does that style really work for him? I'm curious to see that.
I'm curious to see that too. I say he fights Chad. Beat Chad because it's worked for you, and trying to change Chad is going to work for Hopkins. You know, and I think that's what Hopkins is expecting. And that's what he saw, like the rest of us saw that night with Emmanuel Stewart. We saw a confused guy that didn't know who to be. You know, a pressure fighter and trying to go for a KO, or the laid-back guy that allows you to come forward and he capitalizes on what you're going to do. You know, Chad does a lot of good things in the ring, and a lot of us don't give him the credit that he deserves. He does a lot of good things. That's why in the beginning we were so stoked up about him, but then he kind of fell into that trend of being boring. This time around, he needs to be boring. He needs to be boring enough where it makes an older dude like Bernard Hopkins to live by his name, the Executioner. Go after the young buck so that he can make the mistake, you know, and then Chad can capitalize on those mistakes. That's what he's got to do. Chad's no Jermaine Taylor, man. He's not going to set off first, you know, and he's not going to be lightning speed over him the way Jermaine kind of set him off, you know, which I still believe Bernard beat him twice. But Chad just got to make him come forward and do a dance that Bernard really doesn't like to do, man. He doesn't like the salsa dance. Let's be honest. He's a hip-hop guy.
One go more ahead, thing before you gotta let me go. Who you got on the Kendall Holt and Danny fight?
I'm leaning towards Kendall, to be honest. I thought Danny, I don't know, it's weird. I go high and low on Danny, depending on the fight. I wasn't terribly impressed in his last fight. He seems like he's got a little bit of a conditioning issue, kind of fades a little late. And maybe it was just because of the caliber of opponent, you know, kind of took him into deeper water and it was a tougher fight than I think that he expected, maybe. But Kendall's got a real, real chance here. I don't know much about Danny's chin just yet. I haven't seen him really face a true puncher, much less a guy that has a speedy delivery system like Kendall Holt does. I can see this fight going a couple different ways, but we're going to find out what the kid's got in terms of chin, how he deals with real speed, a guy with some length to him. I'm really curious about this fight. I really like the fight a lot. I'm leaning towards Holt a little bit.
Yeah, this is
really
a make-break it for both guys, you know. But Kendall Hall having the experience and that power, you know, I picked against him with Diaz. But this time around, I'm not sure if I'm going to pick against him. You know, Danny Garcia, he's almost like a wave, man. He's always coming in and out. But the pond got really dried with him for a minute. We haven't really seen a whole lot of him. Now he's coming in. He really wants to go up against the waves. And Kendall Holt, man, he doesn't have the biggest waves, but he's got enough waves to make you kind of go back, you know, get you kind of kind of blinded with the sand and stuff. So I would say Danny's got a lot of pressure, and he's got a lot to live up with Kendall Holt, because any mistake, Kendall Holt's going to be there, man, to make him pay for it and possibly even put his lights out. Hey, Matt, thanks, brother, for calling in, man. It's always a pleasure to have you guys, have all the listeners call in, and call back in next week, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold.
Thanks a lot, bro.
Thank you, man.
Let's put in another caller right now. Actually, he's the photographer for Leave It in the Ring and Undisputed. And this is a lucky guy. He's going to be going out to the Gamboa and Ponce de Leon. And he's going to be sporting the colors, you know, he said, at the fight and ringside. George, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Hey, how you guys doing tonight? Great show tonight, bro.
Hey, thank you, brother.
Thank you,
what's
sir.
What's going on, man? Hey, I got your invitation again.
Oh, good.
Guys are going all out, brother. Going all out.
Hey, you know, we got to do it. So, yeah, looking forward to the fight on Saturday, man. I think it's going to be a good scrap for as long as it lasts. I'm just hoping that, you know, I get enough rounds in so I can get some good pictures. I'm hoping that you know, at least five rounds, you know, and not a quick blowout like when Ponce de Leon fought Lopez. I'm looking forward to that. Also, there's another fight there that's pretty good. I believe it's Antonio Diaz taking on who's this kid here?
Oh, who was that again? I'm sorry,
brother. Antonio Diaz, I believe, is going to fight on the undercard. He's taking Luis Cruz. I'm looking forward to that fight also. I haven't seen Cruz, but I know he's very, very talented from what I hear, and I've seen some highlights. So that should be a good scrap also. And there's another guy that's fighting on that card. I happen to know him personally. He's a very all-action guy. He lost the last time against Tian Kennedy. His name is Jorge Diaz. And I'm looking forward to see how he bounces back from that knockout. This is the type of guy, I don't know if you guys seen him fight, but you know,
the war that went down with Tian Kennedy. It was the other half of that war.
Exactly.
That
I mean, this guy,
talking
about a guy who has a lot of heart. I know him personally. He's a little crazy guy. He loves to fight, and he loves to fight for the fans, and you're never going to see this guy in a bad fight. So I'm looking forward to that. You know, he's taking on a guy, Salvador Diaz. He's been knocked out a couple of times, so I expect him. I don't expect the fight to go on too long, unless there's something, you know, something missing there from the loss. But interested enough, the guy that beat Jorge Diaz got knocked out himself not too long ago. So I would like to see the rematch. I thought it was a good fight up to until when Jorge Diaz got caught, and he got caught when they were both kind of. Throwing at the same time, Jorge Diaz got caught with a massive punch, and I mean he tried everything to get up, but he actually got up. I'm sorry, he finished the fight, he has a lot of heart, so I'm looking forward to that one.
I can't wait, dude. I mean, that whole thing. What I really like is that HBO decided to go, you know, tape delay with Adamick and Vitaly, and kind of get back into the heavyweight thing. And a lot of people will say those guys are boring, but I think that's a really fun fight, and that's a rare thing to say about a Vitaly fight. But all those guys do is win, you know. And if they were, you know, they've had their losses earlier in their career, but they've been dominant. They've cleared out the whole division. And if they were 5'9", and the same as the same dominant thing, and they were black, we'd call them Floyd Mayweather. They're about, you know, they're technicians and they're dominant.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and yet.
True.
He's got a little more flash. He talks some trash. And maybe fight fans like that. And I don't mean to insult fight fans that watch 24/7 and say that show's for stupid people. But to me, reality TV just lowers the bar. And maybe
you know
I'm just a highbrow entertainment guy, but that's just me. You know,
Gabe. You know what sucks? It's check this out, George. You know, he's talking about fight fans. It's, you know, reality TV is just made for stupid people. He was telling me the exact same thing in LA. We're sitting down. And while he was telling me this, I was checking out. I just got a new phone, the Fuse, right, from Samsung. And I was watching 24/7. So I clicked it off really slow and sneaky, dude. You know what I mean? And I go, yeah, you're right.
You're right.
I put my phone down and stuff.
funny.
No, and I definitely understand where you're coming from, Gabe. I'm one of the persons that I don't really like reality TV. I thought it was cool when, you know, Flavor Flav was doing his thing. It was funny a couple of times. After that, it kind of got played out. So I know what you're
talking about.
So. Anything that Flavor Flav does is cool. That is everything that he does is fine by me. But
then it got old, and I understand where you're coming from. We're seeing the same thing recycled. But you got to understand, this is for the casual fans. I mean, I watch it just to see what's going
to
happen.
You know,
exactly.
I just wonder though. I don't really know any. Maybe I should just go out and do a poll, but I don't know a lot of casual fans that go, you know, did you catch the last episode of 24/7? Like, people always kind of say that, and it is that kind of trying to pull everybody else in. But I don't see how, you know, from what I've read, how it could be very entertaining or accessible to casual fans. You know, Victor Ortiz's story. Yeah, they did it two times in a row. I watched episode one, and it was just like, this is horrible.
You know what, though? It is built for the casual. I got to stop you there, because I went down, you know, to see my aunt, okay, my tia, and, you know, when I walked through the door, she's like, oh, my God, I didn't know that Victor was abandoned. And I felt bad, because I was like, yeah, it's kind of a played-out story already. You know, I've heard it already. But the family in the house, they had never heard that about him. You know, I mean, they really didn't even have heard of Victor Ortiz. So it is kind of geared for them, and that story is kind of, you know, replayed, and they add a little bit more, and, you know, and they do that. That's why I really don't sit back and, I don't DVR the 24/7, and I'm not one of those guys like, oh, 24/7's on now. Oh, because I just kind of go like, who really cares? You know what I mean? I really kind of care when it's fight time. When you hear Michael Buffer saying, are you ready to get rumbled? That's when I get all excited. I stand up and stuff. You'll occasionally catch 97 Rough shadow boxing and stuff, but it's rare. But you know, I get excited about stuff like that. The other things, it's just an added flavor to the candy I like to eat.
Well, you know, just to comment on that, I think it has worked. Just today, someone from work approached me. This is not a big fan. I'm actually trying to make him a fan. You know, I tell him about the fights. He should watch, etc. He came up to me and said, "Oh, did you see that 24/7? Out of nowhere." So it is working. I think it does appeal to certain fans. I don't think it hurts. I think especially the first episode, a lot of people ate it up. I mean, they love controversy. And you know, Mayweather loves when people hate him, so it's perfect. You know, here's, you know, a lot of people on Twitter, everybody's going off how Mayweather's an ass or disrespecting his father, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, you hear it everywhere, every boxing forum, every.
I guess I look at it like I don't like to be manipulated, and I don't like watching the public be manipulated. And I remember it was about a week or so before that episode aired, and it was like a press release or something about. It was a preview about, Mayweather Sr. and Jr. got into this big fight, you know, wait for the premiere of 24/7, blah, blah, blah. And nobody was really talking about it yet. And then the episode aired, and I knew that was their mostly quits on his stool moment, like White Camp 360 had. And which I thought was kind of cheap after the fact. It was like, let's squeeze one last little bit out of this show by showing you Mosley quitting and his girlfriend calling him a maricon or whatever. And then 24/7 comes on, and sure enough, you see it on Twitter, and you see everybody, like, kind of, I hate to use the word, but cheap, start talking about this thing that I saw a press release the week before about. And it was like them calling the shot. Here we go. We're going to manipulate the public. And all the bloggers and writers that wrote articles about Floyd Mayweather and Sr., is it really controversy, or is it just pre-programming where they say, look, you're going to write about this week. Here's the show. Here you go. Here's your candy. Eat it and spit it out to everybody else and write stories about it. To me, that's just not boxing writing. That's not covering the sport. That's covering, I guess, the personalities, but it's in this kind of prepackaged way, especially since I've watched them film, you know, the show. And even Floyd now saying, well, they're not showing the stuff that I actually did. But is that even really reality? If Floyd's organizing a parade of drag queens and crackheads to make fun of Oscar, or is it just kind of an ugly parade? I don't know.
being on this side of the curtain now, as you know, opposed to when I was just a fan, I kind of look at the way the media works and the way the publicists kind of manipulate things sometimes, and it makes me sick. That's just me. And the way
people eat it up, and
they all feed up. You could throw a rock into the story about their argument. Everybody and their brother wrote that shit. I just thought, is this really a story? Well, why don't we just talk about
fighting? Everybody and their brother wrote that shit, and everybody and their brother did a video about it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
This is the way thing is now, is that this is the way I look at particular things. And you know, I never like to try to bash other websites and stuff until they finally just get on my last nerves and they continue trying to talk smack or say, you know, this and this and that. But a lot of sites, you know, like I always – when people ask me, like, hey, Dave, you know, so you own Leaving the Ring Radio, blah, 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 blah. And so do you put nothing but videos on your site? And I say, no. I said, no, we're not one of those sites. You know, we actually put real content. We actually do real articles. We actually do, make calls to promoters and matchmen and fighters. And this is stuff you're not going to find on other sites. We're not going to steal other people's hard work and then put it up on our site and go, oh, yeah, we're a boxing information site. That's a fight feed, you know, to me, in my opinion. That's a news feed.
Yeah.
There Will Be Blood is a news feed. You know, we put all the pressers on that site only. You don't see any pressers on Leaving in the Ring. Same thing with Undisputed. We're not going to do the norm of what you've seen from other boxing magazines. You're going to see a little bit different. Well, not a complete different, because you can't make something – You can't reinvent the wheel again, but you can sure try to shape it up a little bit different, you know, and add a little bit to it. And that's what we're going to try to do. And I just, to my opinion, is now with the internet, okay. And I'm not knocking it, because that's the way I got my play into the whole game of boxing, of becoming media. Is that everybody feels they can do it, and everybody thinks it's hits is recognition. It's not recognition. You know, and they end up confusing, I got 200,000 hits, so I'm a famous person. I'm this and this and that. And really not, you know. And I think the media, a lot of the media, okay, I'm not singling out just one, but a lot of the media, they want to be either the superstar or the main focus. And I think that's what makes sometimes our sport kind of fall apart a little bit, because the focus should be on the guys, the men and women that lace up, are the men and women we should be praising about and reporting about. Not the other stuff. Forget all the other bullshit that happens around our sport. You know, I mean, we already have one network that does it. ESPN has been notorious for it. They don't even report the real fights. They report if Floyd Mayweather, ended up in jail. TMZ, we have a TMZ already. They reported, you know, Floyd burning the bills and stuff, you know. We have two guys out there that just go and they don't even ask real boxing questions. They ask some questions that you sit there and go, like, it's funny, and you go, like, that was dumb, but okay, it is what it is.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the media has really changed, you know, with the internet. You know, and in some ways, you know, I really credit, you know, and there's a lot of people going on about this rumor about the Ring magazine and trashing Doug Fisher. I look at Doug Fisher and Steve Kim, Gary Randall, who was one of the original owners of House of Boxing, later Max Boxing. Those guys, to me, are pioneers. And, you know, I'm not going to say that everything they write is godlike and we should bow down to them, but those guys were part of the wave of boxing writers that kept boxing relevant. As the papers more and more cut us out and the networks kind of turned away, these were the first guys to put out websites about boxing and cover it in a real way. And try to be basically on the internet what the guys in print in the newspapers were doing on the beat for years and years at the beginning of our sport. I have, you know, utmost respect for that. But at the same time, you know, like anything, everybody and their brother starts to get involved in it, and it does get kind of watered down. And, you know, I've done stories in first person. I just did my, you know, story about Mexico, my trip down there. I think there's sometimes when the writer can be not so much the focal point, but you're basically taking the place of the audience and bringing the audience along with you on your journey in the story. That's really the only time I think it's relevant for me to be part of the story. Or if I go to a gym and I say, well, I saw this and this is what I smelled in the gym or whatever. But it's when, like the video I know we're talking about, where we don't want to give him a plug so we won't say his name, where the writer kind of, or the videographer kind of injects himself in the story and then makes a video of it, you know, Floyd Mayweather talking to me. who gives a shit about you? You know, I want to hear about the quieter. I want to hear of like the stuff with Gary Russell that was just, you know, on. That's what's fascinating to me. When a fighter is talking about, well, when I turn this way or, you know, I change up my speed, that's how I hide my power. All that mechanic stuff, that's the stuff that I'm interested in to hear about from a fighter. Or when the chips are down, this is what I was thinking in this moment. All the other stuff, Floyd talking into his goddamn money. I mean, to me, a guy burning money or talking into stacks of money or talking about how much money he spends or blows in this economy to this fan base, which is a blue-collar fan base, boxing, a lot of poor people here, and you're charging them $70 to see your damn pay-per-view in this, you know, recession that we're in, I find it incredibly disrespectful. I know it's just an image or whatever, but I find it incredibly disrespectful. And it's stuff that I'm not interested in. That's why I'm like, I'm tuning out to 24/7. Color me sensitive, you know, but that's just me.
You sensitive so, bastard.
I am a bastard. I cried in my beer the other night.
You know, when you mentioned that, you know, Mayweather was talking to his money, as soon as that came on, I told Vicky, I said, people are going to hate him for this. They're going to fucking hate this guy. And
right.
This is why
I thought it was funny, to tell you the truth.
I mean, it's stupid, but he does it. He doesn't do it because he thinks he's a comedian. He does it because he wants people to hate him. People are going to, you know, they're going to buy his pay-per-view because they want to see him lose. And they're buying into everything. I mean, I see the ads for 24. I mean, for the fight on different channels now. Even MTV is showing the ads, and a lot of these casual fans are going to buy into that. Victor Ortiz is the rising superstar, you know, with power and speed and everything. They don't know a lot about boxing. They don't know who Floyd is. They don't know anything about boxing. They just know that this is a rising superstar. It's a good looking kid that models, and you know, they're going to have. They're going to probably go with the nice guy instead of Mayweather. So
absolutely.
I think people are buying into it, and this is why HBO airs this stuff. You know, they know it's controversial. They're playing on that. They want this fight to sell. That's why they're making it a pay-per-view.
You know, really quick, too, man, I don't know if you got wind of this, but Lucas Matisse has pulled out of the Eric Morales fight for that star power card due to illness. There's no report of what the illness is. We'll try to follow up with that and find out what happened. So Eric Morales at this moment is without an opponent.
And Marcus Maidana actually turned down the fight too. He's got a fight in Argentina the next week. It's kind of a stay busy kind of thing, but yeah, I don't know what's up with that guy. But he basically just kind of went, nah, I'm good. I'm good with my like payday in Argentina. He passed on the fight. So they're talking about Anthony Crolla out of the UK, who was already actually fighting on the card. They're thinking about there's rumors that that's going to be who they're going to replace him with. I thought Maidana would be the perfect step in opponent, you know. Or my personal choice, I say Christian Favela. Why the hell not? You know, just for meritorious service to boxing. He's Mr. You know, he's kind of picked up where Emmanuel Augustus is left off as the late replacement. I'll fight at any weight, any time, anywhere. He's a fight fans fighter, in my opinion. Give Christian Favela the shot at the title. I mean, this is probably, you know, why not? Why the hell not? I mean, you roll him out for Fight Night Club. You know, he's fought Jesse Vargas and you know, arguably beat him, which you could say about Matisse. He arguably won his last two fights, and Morales, he arguably, you know, won his last fight, but they didn't get the decision. I say, let justice be done. Give me Favela Morales.
Yep. The Road Warrior. The Mexican Road Warrior. Hey, George, let's put you on hold, brother, okay? Got to do our fight schedule. Hey, thanks for calling in,
all
man.
Right,
hey, let us know how it goes at the fight. And, hey, I, you know, I'm going to hit you up tomorrow, too, because I got an assignment for you, brother.
All right. No problem, man.
Okay,
nice
man.
Talking to you guys.
All right, bro.
All right, brother.
Gio's one of the coolest cats, man. He's so laid back. And guy, kid knows his boxing. He's going to get married next year in September in Las Vegas. And they're going all out, man. It should be exciting and fun. I'm definitely going to make my way out there to go celebrate with his wife, Vicky, Victoria, who also writes for Leave It in the Ring. Great couple, great duel, and a great contributors to the sport. which we love, is boxing and stuff, you know. Going really back to, really, like, you know, I said before, man, you know, in order to keep the sport alive, you got to contribute. So I'm not knocking out the work that certain people have done. I'm just knocking the fact that some folks are just a little too up and ready of calling themselves, you know, stars and this and that when they're supposed to be covering the sport. You know, cover the sport.
I'm just you know? A hater. That's my excuse. But
let's go with our fight schedule here on Leave It in the Ring. Let's find out what's happening Friday and Saturday, and then if we can't put out our predictions, and then hey, it's time to sing that Mickey Mouse song, you know, hello, goodbye, it's time to go. Leave It in the Ring is about to leave. Go
wow.
ahead, Gabe. Like that? I rehearsed that for a minute.
That's yeah. Okay, here's the fight schedule. That just what threw me is I'm looking at the fight schedule. I'm like, really? We'll get to this. September 9th, Friday, 2011, at the Grand Casino in Hinckley, Minnesota, Showtime. This will be the last showbox appearance, apparently, of Latif Coyote, should he win. Latif Coyote is 17-0 versus Felix Cora, 22-5-2. I'm pretty sure that with those records, that Latif Coyote probably is going to win, and then he'll probably graduate to Showtime main event. Underneath that in support is Hector Sanchez, 19-1, versus Vincent Arroyo, who's 11-1. Not particularly familiar with either guy, but, you know, you want to look at the records. I don't want to box wreck the thing, but I'm going to go with Hector Sanchez on this one. At the Stadion, I'm not even going to try to pronounce that, Warclaw, Poland, Telefatura, Gabriel Rosado, 17-5, versus Keenan Collins, 13-6-2. Telefatura support is Ronald Cruz, 13-0 versus Christopher Fernandez, 19-13-1. It's another one of those, gee, I wonder who's going to win fights. At the Viva Cuervo Salon in Mexico City, Mexico, this is the fight I was talking about. On Telemundo, Antonio Pitalua, 52-5, versus Cosme Rivera, 32-14-2. I didn't know Cosme Rivera was still fighting.
I didn't know either. I thought he retired, actually.
Yeah, I kind of said that confusing. Pitalua is 52-5 with 46 knockouts. This is a guy that was stopped by Edwin Valero. It was one of his last fights. He's been on a winning streak since then, although he had a split decision loss to Ed Paredes. But Cosme Rivera, like, how old is he? It's kind of crazy. But anyway.
You know what? He's not that old. Cosme Rivera? No, he's not that old. He looks old, but he's not that old.
Oh, you know, he's 41. Yeah, he's 3 years
old. Oh, I thought he was younger than that. No,
you know what? I'm wrong. No, he's actually 35.
There, see?
So I'm actually the old guy in this equation.
We're both the old guys in that equation.
September 10th, Saturday, 2011, at the stadium in Wrocław, Poland. It's a great name for a stadium, Wrocław. On HBO, Vitaly Klitschko, 42-2, versus Tomasz Adamek, 44-1. I'm not going with the upset special. I think Vitaly maybe gets him late in the fight, but I think he definitely wins. Who you got in this one, Dave?
Which one was it? I'm sorry, I was reading something. Mark text me.
You never listen to me anymore.
I know.
Klitschko versus Adamek.
I got Klitschko. I'm saying late round stoppage. You know, the only thing is Adamek comes with a perfect plan, which is to keep continuously circle him and try to stay away from the jab and stay away from him leaning all over his shoulders and his neck. He could be successful, but I don't think that's going to happen because you're going to have to go in the jaws of the shark there, and you're going to be bit. You're going to be cut up a little bit. So. The height, you know, Adamek here, you know, trying out with Michael Grant and Kathy Dufo has said here on Leaving the Ring and other nets too, saying that that was a preparation, not complete, but that was to get Adamek prepared for a big, tall heavyweight. I don't know if people remember this. I kind of really tore into that, saying that, you know, that's not a good fighter to be prepared against, you know. I mean, if anything, you know, how do you prepare against a guy that's his height, you know, 6'7", 6'8", and has a good stiff jab and has very good sensible boxing skills and you know, and is gonna lean on you and has a thundering right hand. I don't see him being able to get the proper training and be prepared for that. You know, I think he's going to have to wing it. And when you're winging it like that, your game plan tends to mush. And you know what happens when it mush? You have to go for broke. And going for broke, you're not going to cash out. You're going to end up becoming change. So I just say I have Klitschko, man.
Yeah. I'm probably go like TKO 11 or decision. I'm actually staying with my pick that I made on TNR this week. I just kind of go with the chalk, although you got to look at home canvas advantage. Adamic might have that. I don't know how the WBC feels about Vitaly Klitschko or Tomasz Adamic. You know, there's not a Mexican in the mix, and so it was hard to point and see if there's going to be any leanings there because, you know, WBC is more of a Mexican-based organization. But I'm just going to go with the chalk. You know, I'm not sure that Tomasz Adamic is a true heavyweight. He's also kind of an older fighter, you know. You know what's interesting to me, and I don't want to cast aspersions on the guy, but people go crazy about, but I'm going to because of what I'm going to say, but
right.
People go crazy about Manny Pacquiao's jump in weight. And, okay, you know, the guy jumped like 12 pounds and, you know, from April 2007 against Jorge Solis to December of 2008 against Oscar De La Hoya. There was a huge jump in weight. All of a sudden, he's beaten up a welterweight. I get
right.
that. But Adamic was a light heavyweight
yeah.
back in 2007. He jumped from 174 in February of 2007 against Chad Dawson to his next fight. He was 197 pounds
mm-hmm.
Against Pineda, you know, and as a cruiserweight. Now he's fighting, you know, Vitaly Klitschko, and I don't know what he's, you know, they haven't weighed in yet, but his last fight he was 215 pounds, and added to which he's 34 years old, and that's pretty much when he, deep into his 30s, when he began this move up in weight. You don't hear a lot of people yelling at him to take the test. Just an observation.
But you know what, the other observation about that is that, and this is another thing, could be in comparisons of Manny Pacquiao, is Adamic was struggling with guys at a lightweight division, you know? And since moving up, he hasn't really struggled a whole lot. He's been a little bit more mobile, a little bit more quicker, and he's been able to tag the heavyweights a little bit easier with the combinations. You know, the only thing is that he's fighting somebody that is a lot bigger, a lot more dangerous, and a little bit more fresh, a little fresher than his brother. I mean, I'm sorry. He's not as fresh as his brother, but you know, this is the telling of his
really
career.
Good matchmaking, and I really think that, you know, Chris Arreola in a lot of ways ate his way out of any chance of winning, and even then it was a majority decision, you know,
mm-hmm.
for Adamic over Arreola. He got hurt late against Michael Grant. I remember watching that fight, and he did go the distance with Kevin freaking McBride, but still. It's just kind of funny to me that, you know, people will point at one thing and they won't look at another thing. And then when you actually try to point out the facts of drug testing and all that, and they kind of just turn a blind eye. Just take the test. It doesn't matter. And I don't know a goddamn thing about what the test is. Just take it. You know, it's kind of funny.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. The other thing, too, is like, you know, what I like about this Adamic and Klitschko thing is that you always hear that famous quote that's been throughout history is the little good man will lose to the good big man, you know. And I think this really is the state of quote when we think of Adamic and Klitschko. You know, the good man, you know, if he fought a subpar heavyweight champion, he'd probably win, but he's not. He's fighting a good big heavyweight champion. You know,
yeah,
that's why.
A giant
of a heavyweight. And that's why I'm leaning with Klitschko. I think that Thomas is going to give him a good run. He's going to give his fans a good run. But when those later rounds come in, and that's the thing is that Vitaly does, it takes his wheels to be oiled up. It takes him in the mid rounds to start spinning. And that's why I say it's going to be a late KO rather than an early KO. But anyway, let's move on.
Like Floyd in that way where he kind of zeroes in and slowly finds his range with his awkward,
mm-hmm.
weird, that little weird right hook that he's got from the rear when you kind of dip to your left. He's like, boom, he like beats you with his punch. Yeah, it takes some time. And the co-feature on this, I think actually the heavyweights are probably going to be shown second. At the Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City on HBO, Yuriorkis Gamboa, 20-0, versus Daniel Ponce de Leon, 41-3. I don't think Ponce de Leon's going to find the Fountain of Youth. I think Gamboa gets him out of there, probably like somewhere after the eighth round.
I'm going to go with Gamboa too. I think that I'm going to go with the seventh round. You know, I think that Ponce is going to take it to him, and that's going to be the mistake. And he's going to have some success, and he's going to fall asleep on Gamboa's speed and power. Or vice versa, Gamboa falls asleep on the awkwardness of Ponce de Leon and gets caught and clipped. And finally see him in a position we have yet to see him yet. You know, the other positions have been flash knockdowns. I think if he gets hurt, it's not going to be a flash knockdown with Ponce. Ponce has a lot of power. But I'm really leaning with Gamboa. I mean, it's hard to pick against the kid right now. You know, but like I said before, I'm going to say it again. Don't count out Daniel Ponce de Leon. Don't count him out, man. He does have a punch to turn somebody's head around 360 style.
Yeah, seriously. He's got definitely an educated puncher's chance in this fight. I would not be surprised to see him hurt him and get him out of there, because I think if he hurts Gamboa, he's going to finish him, you know.
And you're saying there's another, right. And this is another thing, is that Ponce de Leon is coming in as a winner. I know he lost against, Broner, but in his mind and a lot of fight fans, he won that fight. I thought he won that fight, and I remember correctly, you thought he won that fight. So you're not seeing a guy that's questioning whether or not he can be successful. You're coming, you got a guy that's coming in saying, I beat this other guy, so I'm coming in as the winner. You're fighting another dude, meeting each other at the same level. Two guys that believe they're going to be victorious. That's the dangerous part about that fight, too.
Yeah, I agree. He's coming in with like full confidence and with something to prove, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe he can pull this thing off. Moving ahead, same night in Aguascalientes, Mexico, Juan Salgado 23-1-1 versus Argenis Mendez 18-1. Also another fight that evening at the Odyssey Arena, which actually played in the morning here in the States. The Odyssey Arena in Belfast, Northern Ireland. Paul McCloskey, 22-1, versus Brady Prescott, 24-2. This is part of Brady Prescott's "I'm going to beat the hell out of guys that Amir Khan's beaten, that I'm going to do this better than he did." Interesting fight. I kind of lean towards Brady Prescott in this one. I don't, you know, Prescott or McCloskey's kind of awkward, but that's kind of about it.
The only thing is McCloskey is that he's been a little bit more active. Where Prettis, I don't, you know, his guy just comes and goes, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of comes and goes and stuff. And when you're not active and you're, you know, it's one of those that Prescott should be the guy to beat him and knock him out. But when you're not, when you're sitting out of the ring, this is one big complaint we always say is that, bad move, like Timothy Bradley, bad move, because you're not in the ring. You're not doing the things that really do count. No, you're trying to protect your money, or you're trying to make more money, but you're not doing the right things, which is keep yourself, you know, fluent in the ring. You know, she's not a very forgiving person, the ring. She's going to, you know, call you out on your BS. She's going to know when you're rusty. She's going to know when you know what? You just took in too much time off. So here's a slap in the hand. That's only my worry about Prescott here. So I wouldn't count out McCloskey at all in this one. You know, I think that he may be able to do a little bit more that we're thinking.
Yeah, I mean, he's an awkward guy. I mean, I don't care what the Khan camp says. He was giving Khan trouble. Khan couldn't hit him. You know, and he was sort of moving around, and it was very defensive. And you know, guys like that are kind of hard when they don't want to, they don't want to agree with you on how we're going to fight this fight. You know, they're going to fight their own fight, and maybe it was that Alex Ariza wasn't there in the corner, in the training camp to condition Khan, and that's why they brought him back. But I thought Khan looked like crap in that fight, and a lot of it had to do with Paul McCloskey. But he looked good in the next fight, but. But that fight, she just looked off to me, you know. But that's it. That's your weekend fight schedule. You got about 3 minutes left.
Yeah, there you go. 3 seconds. Three seconds left here.
Oh, nice.
Anyway, so, hey, another great night here on Leaving the Ring. I appreciate all the feedback and all the support that we get here on Leaving the Ring. Be sure to check out Undisputed. We're going to be a big part of it. You're going to see a lot of our work being on the October issue. But right now the September's issue is out, and the UK writers have done a great job. Sean Brown has done a fantastic job. So we're just really looking forward, myself, the rest of the crew from Leaving Ring, my co-partner here, Gable Montoya. We're looking we can't wait, which we're already doing. It's the, you know, we're in the motions already of working on the October magazine. So be sure to support it. Be sure to go over there. I'm telling you, you're not going to regret it. You're going to get some great
content.
Yeah.
I'm mostly excited about being Undisputed Magazine's first centerfold, really giving the fans what they want and when they want it. So look for that.
Yep, there we go.
This weekend, I will give you a call. We're gonna I'll talk to you after the fights, fight fans. I'll catch up with you next week. And Dave, I'm out.
Hey, there you go. Another thing, really quick too, man. Send us your pictures. We want to put them in the magazine. Send us the pictures of you being at the fights or you with the fighter. You know, get yourself on the magazine and stuff and write down a few lines of what the fighter you're with and what event you were, okay? Get on there. It's going to be the bird eye view from the fight fan. Take care, everybody, and you have a good night.